just a little bit unpleasant. Don't move. Stay very still. Don't talk.
How long does this take?
Not long.
Going to work together. We're going to build a relationship. You have a dream problem, don't you?
How did you know?
It only happens once a week.
That may be true. We don't know that, though we haven't confirmed that yet. But it could happen more than once a week. It could happen twice a week. But that might be a result of the time rift portal.
It only happens
here.
Or, I've been told, in the air.
Night Shift.
It's invisible.
It's intangible.
It's Night Shift.
It's on the air.
And If you should be asked about the night shift, we suggest that you take the fifth.
Night shift.
You can feel it.
Night shift. He's so squishy.
Mondays.
At midnight. Loading and unloading only. That is the night shift.
It's invisible.
Night shift.
We see you. You can feel it.
I was looking under my bed and that's where I found the night shift.
Midnight till 3 a.m.
Really? Are you really listening?
We can hear you.
Well, all I want is to stop dreaming. You have a dream problem, don't you?
How did you know?
I would like to explain about...
Think that it's time that somebody cared enough to have a dream?
Night shift.
Where life is like science fiction.
Just remember, wherever you go, there you are.
Not exactly the electric chair. I'm going to count to 10 as you're falling asleep. And when I'm finished, you'll be deeply, deeply asleep. 1, falling asleep. 2, falling asleep. 3, falling asleep. 4, falling asleep. 5, falling asleep.
How long has it been since you slept?
I don't know. It's fine. I never seem to get tired. But I know I haven't slept since this thing began.
Joe Masiri.
Mike Sargent.
How are you, Joe Masiri?
I'm okay.
Yeah? Only okay?
Just a little okay. That's
just a little okay. What's taking away the big okay?
It was a long day, a long weekend.
Did you do anything exciting?
What do we have? Film festival conference. We had board meeting for the Winter Film Awards. We had meet up with the Bad Samaritan. We had Cinco de Mayo.
What do you mean meet up with the Bad Samaritan?
It's investors got together and like went to see a screening on Friday night.
Investors got together to see Bad Samaritan?
Yes.
Investors like your investors?
Yeah. Well, I'm an investor in it. Legion M.
Are you really?
Yes.
I didn't know that.
There you go.
All right. So, well, Bad Samaritan is a movie that we played last week. We played the interview with Joe Masiri, Dean Devlin.
That's right.
It's a film that came out this Friday that, from what I understand, it's a good film, but it just didn't make any money. Now, why do you think that is, Joe?
You know, it's an independent film.
Uh-huh.
They were trying to do the grassroots kind of thing. Although, right. I will have to say, I did see the trailer popping up on a lot of TV shows like Fear the Walking Dead, Into the Badlands, you know, a lot of places. So I don't know why. I guess, you know, Infinity Wars was still riding the high.
Well, it was. You know, it's interesting because that film and Tully did not make much money. They both got pretty decent reviews.
Yep.
And Dean Devlin, who a lot of folks know from all the disaster movies he did with his partner.
Room 44, Independence Day.
Well, the big disaster movie. I'm not talking about Room 44. That's more like what he's doing now. And who was his partner?
Well, not anymore. But
Roland Emmerich.
Roland Emmerich.
Now, what happened?
You know, after a while, people, they kind of go their own way.
They went their own way.
Quote Fleetwood Mac.
Like a la Fleetwood Mac, okay.
Well, to quote Fleetwood Mac.
Well, you're tuned to listen to Sponsored Radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. The name of the show is Night Shift, and we have an agenda. Our agenda, besides trying to entertain you, educate you, and make you see the world in a different way, and it's probably impossible not to see that life is like science fiction today, as we've become. The most weird things in the world have become normal. And I have some really bizarre life is like science fiction stories, I gotta say. But right now, we're in the middle of our marathon, or in the beginning of our marathon. And the edict is for every show to do between 10 and 20 WBAI buddies.
What is a BAI buddy?
Well, a BAI buddy, here's what the deal is. Besides the fact that you could go to give to WBAI.org or you could pledge at 516-620-3602, being a BAI buddy basically means that you're a member of WBAI, but you subscribe, just like you subscribe to anything else, whether it's Hulu or Netflix or cable or your phone or your electricity, anything that you
want.
Well,
you don't subscribe. Maybe the New York Times. I don't know about the electricity thing.
Well, you could call it a subscription. But the point I'm making is that you pay basically a monthly fee for something that makes your life better. That's the world we live in, wouldn't you say? Like, running water makes your life better. Heat.
If you live in Flint, I could debate that.
Well,
Michigan.
In Flint, Michigan. That's true. That's true.
You know, that doesn't make you. This is true.
All right. Well, Larry, unless you live in Flint, Michigan, water is something that if you pay for it, you pay for it because it makes your life better. You pay for electricity because it makes your life better. You pay for cable or anything that you have that you enjoy that means something to you. You pay something for it. Something small. Perhaps. And that's what a BAI buddy is. It allows you to pay something small every month. The minimum is $10, but you can go as high as you want, and you just do it monthly. You know, so if you pay pledged $10 a month, that's $120 a year. You can afford that. That's something you can afford, and it helps us because every 20 BAI buddies means one less show we have to pitch. Do you realize that?
No, I didn't know that.
That's the edict. If we can get 20 BAI buddies per show, we won't have to pitch. I'd be with that. I'd be with the not having to pitch. Because we do have the DGM, the music you're listening to, and you'll be listening throughout the show. We are pitching for a $35 pledge. We send you that music for free. You can just say, I want my DGM. That's a DGM Spring 2018. And you can call 516-620-3602.
How many tracks are on here, Mike?
57 tracks over 5 hours.
Wow.
over 5 hours, and I've mined. And I have stuff on here specifically for you to hear too, Joe. Specifically that I put together for Joe. Walk on by, Joe. If you see Joe walking down the street, just walk him by. Let me ask you a question, Joe.
Yes.
Do people say anything about you having a baby face? Do they call you baby face? Were you called baby face as a child?
No.
As an adult, were you called baby
face? Face? No. Joe.
Baby face Joe.
Never.
Joe.
Get out of here.
Joe face. My sister.
Your sister says that nobody ever called you baby face.
No, I mean, she would know, and my brother would know. Nobody ever...
Nobody ever called you baby face.
You never
nobody ever called
you
baby face
to
your
R&B
face.
Singer.
Nobody ever, even behind my back.
How do you know?
Because I have friends who would be like, hey.
Oh, you have eyes in the back of your bed?
No, I have confidants.
Confidants who would tell you if anybody was calling you baby face. I understand. All right, so I have a couple things I did want to ask you, Joe, considering what's happening in the world.
Yes.
And I did send you a story because we're living in the 21st century. And let me ask you just a general question, Joe.
Yes.
Okay. Besides the fact that you do. First question is, why do you think people should pledge for WBAI?
Why?
Why?
Because we live in a irreprehensible time of conflicts between the monetized media and the
monetized media
and all these radical politicians and their fringe movements in a constant clash that's as epic as the final battle in
Terminator 2
Excalibur.
Okay
there you go. It's or even in Lord of the Rings. And they're only the bastions of public radio that still deliver a unadulterated, informed news source where you can accept or you can choose not to accept what they say. But, you know, at the end of the day, these are the only voices out there and you need to support them. It's an oasis of
non-monetized voices.
Rational thought. It's an oasis of rational thought. There you go. And that's why you need to support BAI. Because you're not going to get here where you would get anyplace else. Like Jim Freund's Hour of the Wolf, who just celebrated its 50th year.
Wow.
Can you imagine that?
No.
And the most amazing thing is if you give a listen to any of these other public radio stations in New York, their pedigree harkens back to the early days of WBAI.
Oh.
A lot of the people out there, a lot
there
of them
are three
out there.
Men in a boat with four so cigarettes, if, but no,
you know, WBAI is the greenhouse.
That's from which other plants can spring.
Where plants can grow, mature, and then go out.
Mature.
Into the world, taking their nature cleaning abilities and...
Nature cleaning.
Well, you know,
ability.
Like a tree will take the carbon dioxide out of the air.
Well, that's the going back to the Lord of the Rings thing. Yeah, with the trees getting in on it.
Yeah, there you go.
I'm with that. Well, let me ask you a question, Mr. Guest. You are someone who I assume, did you grow up listening to the radio?
I did listen to the radio.
And from your perspective, what is public radio to you? Now, I mean, you're part of public radio now, being on the radio show. But what does public radio mean to you as opposed to commercial radio?
Obviously, fewer commercials.
This is true. There are no commercials. That is a big difference. And you know why there are no commercials? You know why there are no commercials, Joe?
Because there are no corporate sponsors.
Exactly. And that means that, that when we say listener sponsored, if you're listening right now, that's you. You're the listener. And by sponsor, that means you support us. That means you give us money. So that's what we're asking for you to give us money. 516-620-3602. $35. And you can get the Spring DGM 2018. Now, Joe, I did send you your story. I saved the story. I had the story for you last week when you went to Slumberland and did not come. I want to know what you think.
Joe and it's like Little Nemo in Slumberland.
Little Nemo, Little Joe in Slumberland. Babyface Joe in Slumberland.
Well,
what the hell are you doing?
Slumberland.
No, it's not loading. Oh, there it is.
Talk to me.
21st century exorcist learns to cast out demons with a cell phone. Good night, everybody. There we are.
I'm just saying. I need you to read the story and then tell me your thoughts.
Well, I'm having problems reading it, but I'll...
You want me to read it? You can't read it? Come on.
No, no. Look, it's not... When I make it bigger, it doesn't move.
Babyface. Well, that's because you're on an Android phone.
No, the other stuff moves.
I'm going to go...
Read the story, Mike.
Okay, you want me to read the story? I'll find the story. Because I do want your opinion on this, because I find it fascinating. So here we are. Hold on.
Hey, Spock, what do you want on your hot dog?
Okay,
surprise me.
Where is it?
Technology?
I have to look at what I sent you.
Okay. Look, don't stare.
What do you mean?
It's no good for your eyes.
What does that even mean?
You should look for it, but not stare at it.
All right, well, you turn to listen to sponsored radio at WBAI. There are people going to try and call. I don't want you to call unless you've actually... Is that you hitting the microphone there, Mr. Guest? I hear you hitting the microphone.
No, that was me with this cup.
Why are you hitting the cup on the phone?
I wasn't.
You were.
I'm hitting it on the table.
It was hitting the microphone.
No, look, Mr. Guest, look.
I see it and I hear it too.
Yeah, but it's not the microphone.
It certainly sounded like the microphone.
Well, just shows that your many years in the radio industry are for naught.
Thank you, Joe.
How's that piece coming?
There are three men in a boat with four cigarettes but no matches. How do they manage to smoke?
Okay, here we go.
Go!
All right, the 21st century exorcists learn to cast out demons with a cell phone.
And most of us can't even figure out the demons.
Okay, Rome. About 200 aspiring exorcists gathered on Monday for a week-long course in casting out demons. Now, this story is from April 17th, so this is a couple weeks ago they did this. Okay, including cell phone if necessary, amid increased demand for service among Roman Catholics. Participants, many of them priests, will attend lectures and talks on a range of topics, including witchcraft in Africa and how to tell the difference between demonic possession and mental illness. I think that's an important distinction there. And a step-by-step guide to casting out demons. Cardinal Ernest Simoni of Albania drew strong interest in the first session from Albania. In the first session by citing the use of cell phones in exorcisms. They call me and we speak. That's how I do it.
Talk about spam.
Okay, said the 89-year-old Simoni, who told Reuters after his address, explaining how he would read the prayers of exorcism in Latin over the phone, just as he would if performing the lengthy rite in person.
I have a call from Bazooza.
Exactly. Although no official figures are available, Catholic Church officials say the number of demonic possessions is on the rise. Now, that's something we covered here on the show, because I want to ask you why you think demonic possessions are on the rise.
Donald Trump's in the White House. What? I'm not stupid.
The number of exorcisms has definitely increased over the years as the requests to carry out exorcisms has increased.
We're going
to
make it hell on earth again.
Said Professor Giuseppe Ferrari.
Brimstone.
Stop. Brimstone here on earth.
There'll be wailing and gnashing of teeth like it hasn't been seen before.
You're a fool. Joe's doing his Trump impression. The number of exorcisms has definitely increased over the years, and requests carried exorcisms increase at Professor Giuseppe Ferrari, an organizer of the Course on Exorcism and the Prayer of Liberation.
I can't believe any priest's last name that sounds like a race car.
Stop. It says here, at the Vatican-approved Pontifical Regina Apostolorum University in Rome. I'd say that fast.
What does Dan Brown have to say about
it? It says, this course is useful because it prepares the priests who carry out exorcisms to have a complete vision, a multidisciplined view of the situation, he added. Father Benigno Paliglia, an exorcist for the Diocese of Palermo, told Vatican Radio in February that he had performed about 50 exorcisms in the past 2.5 years.
He's a Sicilian.
Stop. It says here they have auxiliary exorcists, as well as licensed exorcists, theologians, psychologists, medical doctors, criminologists, and church historians who will also address the course participants.
Hey, who called the foot of the exorcist?
With a nod to the U.S. thriller writer Dan Brown, whose novels such as Angels and Demons... Here it is. Whose novels such as Angels and Demons often concern the Catholic Church, one lecture is entitled Angels and Demons in Sacred Scripture and the Teachings of the Church.
Hey, somebody call for the exorcist. Here who called him?
Students who include several dozen women will receive a certificate.
A certificate.
Like you go to somebody's house and they got a certificate of exorcism on the wall.
Send in three box tops and you can have your own certificate of exorcism.
Only priests can perform exorcisms and only with their bishop's permission or a license. Now, that means there's an...
I asked you out to buy this license. I got it in my pocket.
Exorcism license.
The power of my license can tell you.
Stop. Lay Catholics, including women. I'll let that sentence lay. Lay Catholics, including women, can be what a course entry called auxiliary exorcists, meaning they can be present at the rite, pray, and give moral support to the priest, casting out the demon.
2, 4, 6, 8.
So exorcism is sexist. Women are only lay Catholics, okay? You understand that. Keep that in mind. It says, Simone, the Albanian cardinal, said the exorcism should be only attempted after doctors are unable to explain the behavior of a person deemed to be demonically possessed. Discernment is important,
he
said.
Hey, Father, put that Bible down.
Stop, he said, stressing several times that he only saw himself as the instrument of a higher power.
Ooh, you're talking to me?
It is Jesus who liberates. It is his power, he said. In all the exorcisms I have done, the Lord has helped me. I am not the great one.
I saw the light.
So what's your take, Joe? Joe, first of all, in all seriousness, why do you think exorcisms are on the rise? Why is there more demonic possession happening?
Because children are not brutalized for their misappropriations like we were when we were growing up as kids.
So what does that make them? More convenient vessels for demons?
It puts the fear of God into them.
So if you're not afraid of God, that means you're open to the devil?
Yes, you are.
How so?
Listen, Flip
Wilson used to say, why not be afraid of the devil? If you're afraid of the devil, wouldn't you be afraid?
No.
Do you agree with this theory, mystery guest? Yeah, what's your take? Why do you think there are more exorcisms?
She doesn't even believe in God. She's an atheist. So
she didn't say that. She didn't
teasing,
say that. Okay.
I'm
just saying. So why do you think there are more exorcisms?
Well,
and more demonic possession.
Well, all right. How easy is it to convince people that this is what's going on? What's the profit?
The profit?
Yeah. How much does it cost to get one of these?
Oh, an exorcism? I don't know. They don't go over the cost here in this article. They just talk about how they're training priests. Right. I mean, I don't know if it's a moneymaker for the church, you know, like how many exorcism dollars have they made? You think they charge for exorcism, Mr. Joe?
Well, I think, they take all sorts of donations. So.
It's supposed to be a charitable response on the part of the church.
They like the whole kind of, like you need us.
Professional hobby.
You're going to need
us. You get baptized, you make your communion.
And then you're going to need
You make your confirmation, and you get married. There's an envelope for that.
And don't forget about us, because, you know, you might become possessed a little later on. You never know.
There's no envelope.
I don't know. I mean, there's got to be a reason why there's more demonic possession on the rise, don't you think?
Maybe it's all that volcano eruption in
Should
Hawaii.
We take a call? Do you think people are pledged?
I don't. Well, can't you check that?
We can give out the phone number.
But if you're possessed, why don't you pledge? We'll exercise you.
The music that you're listening to is what we call DGM, stands for Damn Good Music. And if you're interested in having it and you want to have it for yourself to listen whenever you want, you can make a call, 516-620-3602, or give to WBAI.org, or you know what you can do? You can go on our Facebook page, and there's a link right there on the page. You can make a pledge right now, $35, boom.
Is this the spring collection?
Yes, it's the spring collection, 2008. But 2018, I'm sorry, not 2008, 2018.
Pass the basket.
And I recycled, I had the cover that I did for the 2008, which was the first DGM collection. So this marks the 10th anniversary of DGM here on Night Shift. Just so you know. 10th anniversary. 10th anniversary. But, Joe Basiri, one more important question
for
you. This is very important now. Are you listening? Joe Basiri, are you listening?
Maybe not.
Are you listening, Joe? Joe, are you listening? All right, so here is my question to you, Joe Basiri. Are you willing to encourage people to pledge? What are you willing to do to get people to pledge? I want to know what you're willing to do, Joe.
What am I willing to do?
What are you willing to do? Because you're an investor in this film company. What's it called? Zoom? What's it called? What's the name of this film company?
Legion M.
Legion M. Okay. Yes. I knew there was an M in there. And how did you get involved with that?
I saw a presentation by them.
And why did you want to get involved? What impressed you?
Because they're actively pursuing projects, and investors can bring projects to their intention.
Oh, okay.
So there you go. You can submit screenplays.
You can submit screenplays. Did you submit anything?
Not yet.
Okay, but you plan
I'm going to go to AFM first, and then we'll see what happens.
All right. So, how do you liken that to WBAI?
Well, it's something totally different.
Okay, talk to me.
Because even Legion M is entertainment, and while we do turn around and provide some entertainment here, we do slip in the occasional fact. So we're educating you.
The occasional fact.
Well, you know, per article, a little bit here, a little bit there. We're not like, you know,
inundating you.
You know, we're not we're not shoveling it on you kind of thing. You know, we have been doing this for almost 30 years. We have.
Wow.
1986, 87?
Since I was 12.
Wait a minute, but there was Night Shift before.
No, Night Shift didn't start till 1991, Joe.
No?
No.
But you were at the radio station.
I was at the radio station, but I was not doing Night Shift.
Oh. What, were you cleaning up after the cat?
I was cleaning up after the cat, yes. Pacifica. There used to be a cat here named Pacifica.
Kind of thing. The days of the Creative Unity Collective and 35th and 8th Avenue when I hopped on board. And I used to work there.
Yes, you did.
I ran the night
shift. I
didn't
even know you back then. I
ran the elevator.
I met you. Did you run the elevator? Get out.
Yeah, I got paid for it because I was working at TWA back in the time on the 2 to midnight shift at Penn Plaza. Penn Plaza. And then I would work over and relieve...
Sydney.
No, Sydney or, who passed away?
Oh, Fred?
Fred. Fred Sydney Kuhn. Or Fred?
Fred is how I got to be on the air.
Fred Kuhn.
Fred Kuhn.
And I would come over and run the elevator until 8 o'clock in the morning. Then I would go home and sleep, and then go back at 2 o'clock to TWA.
Wow.
So, and then on the weekends, because back in those days, you had to pass the test to be on the master control.
Right. Yes, and get an FCC license. Yes, I did that too.
So I would work on the weekends, and you got to love those guys at Conservo Latino, because it would be like, Mr. Joe, can you help out? The engineer is not here, and we need somebody to help make the show and do the live show we're doing today.
What kind of...
That's a terrible... But okay. Anyway, but the good thing was that they always made it a party, so there was lots of food kind of thing, and you got to eat like a king when you engineered a Conservo Latino. And I got to meet Ruben Blades, Tito Puente, a couple other, you know, big Latino artists back in the day. And Sunday afternoon, I could always anticipate about 40% of the time, ended up engineering for them. And the old, remember the old meat locker?
Of course I remember the meat
locker. We had a meat locker.
I spent many, many hours in the meat locker. I have photos of meat.
How did they get it in there?
They built it there.
It was a meat locker. It was a real meat locker.
It had that meat locker handle on it.
And
it was a sound booth.
But no, but it was like a meat locker.
They called it a meat locker.
It was that thick and metal. No, there was no air conditioning there or anything. So
that's for sure.
And that's when we used to have soundproof doors and reel-to-reels all over the place. And we had a music library.
Yes, we did.
Though it be ill-kept, it was there. So
all those things.
We had lockers.
All those things.
Yes.
Yes, we did have lockers.
We had lockers.
We had lockers at 120 Wall Street,
And too. We had an amazing computer room.
Yes, we did.
I was there when the guys from the computer show brought in the... We had six computers.
As big as the rooms.
And it was... They were DOSPROM computers. And they were like...
DOSPROM.
This is how you turn it on. These are the books. This is how you bring up the directory. These are the programs we have loaded. You come with us with an intelligent question, we'll answer it. If you ask us a question that was in the book, we ignore you. So...
Wow.
Wow.
You've been here a long time, Joe. So how are you? How are you willing to encourage people to move to?
Well, you know, pledge? every December 31st, I look at my finances and there's a chunk of change and I cut it up and I give equally to all my favorite charities. So from the New York Women in Film and Television, WBAI, the Dove Foundation, a bunch of different ones. So, but I am willing, if it takes my doing this, to be a WBAA body for $12 a month.
Buddy or body?
Buddy.
All right, so you're saying if somebody else pledges right now.
Right now.
If somebody calls right now at 516-620-3602, you'll do a matching pledge. You yourself, even though you're here on the air, you will become a BAI buddy as well?
Yes.
516-620-3602. You too can become a BAI buddy, and you can match Joe.
And I'll even go
Joe
this.
Will match you.
I will even go this far to say that for every person that pledges from now to when we go off the air, I will add another dollar.
Wow.
To my pledge.
To the tally. Wow. So if we get 50 people, that's $50.
Yes.
Wow.
516, call right now, break Joe's bank. 516-620-3602.
Mike gets excited spending other people's money.
Break Joe's bank.
Well, I can't buy you beers anymore.
Well, there it is. Yeah, but BAI will survive. Give to, or you can go to give2wbai.org, and it shows you how to be a BAI buddy right there. But do it during this show. That's the important thing. You have to do it as part of the show. Do it in the name of this show. They'll ask you when you fill out the information, what show you're doing in the name. Do it for that.
In
the name of Night Shift.
The power of Night Shift compels you.
That's right. Even if you're a lay Catholic. So what you can do, though, is make that pledge.
Lay Catholic.
Well, that was part of the exorcism thing, the lay Catholics. 516-620-3602 or give to wbai.org or just go to the Facebook page, NITESHIFT.
And you can get the flowers, they put a rosary beads on your head.
You can get the DGM 2018 right now.
Right. Now, do it.
Correct.
Do it.
Boy, wonder.
Do it. Do it. Do it. Do it.
Mystery guest, I gave you a story.
Oh, you sent me a story?
Yes, I did.
Oh, I didn't see it. Oh, this is fascinating.
Fascinating.
Headless chicken. Still standing a week after being decapitated, is adopted by vet who drops food down its neck.
Now, that is a title that bears rereading. I mean, if there's ever been a Life is Like Science Fiction story, this is it. Go ahead. Read that title again, please, just for
I'm just going to jump into the story.
No, I want to hear the title again.
It basically reiterates the title.
Do it.
A headless chicken has survived a week since being decapitated and is being fed by its adopted owner to keep it, quote, alive. Bizarre footage shows the chicken still standing despite having only a bloodied stump where its head used to be. I can relate. It is not known how the unfortunate bird lost its head. But it has now been adopted by a vet who is feeding it by dropping food and antibiotics down its neck. Supakadi Aruntong, who lives in central Thailand, said the animal is tame and is feeding well despite its ordeal. The animal has its life. If it wants to live, we feed it, she said. She is now hoping someone will take it off her hands.
Is his name Stumpy?
Stop.
The longest a chicken has survived without a head is 18 months.
Wow!
18 months! Now, how can a chicken survive without a head for 18 months?
I've been wondering how you've been going so long.
Stop.
The bird still has a long way to go before beating the record for the longest period of chicken has remained standing after decapitation. A chicken named Mike hit the headlines after it survived for 18
She
months.
She lied. She made that up.
No, this is the mirror.co.uk. Check it out.
A chicken named Mike
hit the headlines after it survived for 18 months without a head between 1945 and 1947.
Shut up,
scientists believe the positioning of a chicken's head away from the front of its skull could be one of the reasons why Mike survived for so long.
Dr.
Tom Smulders told the BBC he believed that up to 80% of Mike's brain, including the part that controls heart rate, breathing, and hunger, remained untouched by his decapitation. You'd be amazed how little brain there is in the front of the head of a chicken.
Radio host down. Radio
Mike
host down.
Eventually suffocated when mucus got caught in his throat. The owners, Lloyd and Clara Olson, would usually help Mike by clearing the mucus with a syringe, but they were woken in the night by the sound of Mike choking and were too late to help.
Now, wait a minute. Mike, the headless chicken,
choked on his own sputum.
That's
well, that was
disturbing.
Years ago. I mean, this is a chicken who, like, in Thailand, they want this chicken to find a new adoptive mother or family.
Did you hear about the chicken in the rooster in Miami?
No, what rooster in Miami?
You got to Google it. So this Santeria guy was going to sacrifice this chicken, and they rescued it, and it's become a menace in the neighborhood.
Isn't he like an evil chicken? Is it headless?
No, he's been chasing cats and dogs.
Stop!
But in the audit, in the reporting,
how does a chicken chase cats?
They
and dogs?
They were feeding it Cuban coffee. They was like
who's
it,
they?
The people were taking care of it. Jacked up the rooster on Cuban coffee.
Oh, I feel so bad for this chicken.
All right, please, finish the chicken story.
That's the end of the chicken story.
I do feel bad. Like, so in 18 months, the whole thing is...
But you can empathize.
I mean, this is a new story that was sort of usurped by an older story. But this news story is just, you know, it's
a... How do you find a headless chicken? Where do you go to find a headless chicken? Like, wandered out of the
Purdue
farm. Well,
in this
case,
you go to Thailand.
They got weird stuff going over there. They got shaman and shaman and priestesses and...
Well, I guess it's just a weird episode of a chicken.
There you go. Fear the walking chicken.
Fear the headless chicken.
Fear the walking
chicken.
That's
just so bizarre. Tell me that's not a bizarre story.
It's
that's
like it's like you open the door and you look out the window and you hear buck, buck, buck.
You don't hear anything. No, I don't think they're making a sound, but they named the chicken Mike. Like, but who keeps a headless chicken as a pet for 18 months? That's like,
it's still alive.
How long have you been the radio host?
Shut up. Shut up. You go to hell, Joe. You go to hell.
With the headless chicken.
How does your... You don't have a beak.
You don't even have a beak. Joe, I sent you a story, too.
And just put it down his throat.
Can you get, like, a straw and you blow it down there?
They said they had to use a syringe. So, you know.
But chickens and roosters, most of the time, when they get a worm or something, they eat it whole. So, they don't masticate their food.
Yeah, well, I don't know what kind of food they were putting down his throat, but they were dripping something down his throat to feed it for 18 months. Headless chicken food. You can buy that at Walmart.
What's in the water there?
Listen.
Wow.
Joe, I sent you a story.
It didn't beep.
Yes, it did.
How do you know? You got the headphones on, too.
I do. All right, Mr. Gets, you have another story.
All right, well, honestly.
I sent you a story, Joe.
I'm looking. Hold the phone. See, look. This one works. Wait,
so,
look. This one works. See, I can make it bigger and smaller.
Okay, that's very exciting.
I don't know what happened with the other one. You sent me a lousy link. You want me to read the story instead of sending me a link? You sent
very
me
exciting,
you
get Joe.
The
very exciting
story, or is that me?
You tuned to listen to Sponsored Radio.
Are you listening?
9.5 FM. And if you're enjoying the music, you can make a pledge. 516-620-3602. Mm-hmm. Ask for
DGM.
DGM, which stands for Damn Good Music, Spring 2018. Or just go to our Facebook page. There's a link you can click on right there. $35. We send you 57 tracks, 5 hours of music, free. With a $35 pledge.
I don't know what this story is. It says the title is not doing anything for me. Something about antimatter study to benefit...
The title, that's it. I just want you to read the title.
Antimatter study to benefit from recipe for tenfold spatula compression of plasma.
Spatial.
Spatula.
Spatial.
Oh, spatial, sorry. This is what you've been running away from your whole life, buddy boy. I haven't heard this song on a dog day yet.
I thought you'd escape. Well, guess what?
That title one more time, Joe.
Let me boot up my communicating device. It says antimatter study to benefit from recipe for tenfold spatial or spatula compression of plasma.
That's like only data could understand what that means.
What I don't, it's like
one more time. Mystery guest understands.
She does?
Yes, she does.
She's not giving me that vote.
She was a science major.
Not giving me that vote of confidence.
I know. Let me hear it one more time.
Antimatter. We know what that is.
Yes.
And then there's a study.
They're studying antimatter.
They're studying it. To benefit. Okay, so they're going to add something to study that's going to enhance.
It's going to enhance the studying of antimatter.
From recipe.
A recipe.
Aunt Jemima, Betty Crocker, Ronzoni, I don't know.
Betty Crocker.
For tenfold, so something to the tenth power. Spatial compression. Okay. So they're gonna, is that like when you go to the store and you get the vacuum sealer bag and you put your shirts in it and you suck the air out and it compresses it?
Product no.
So it fit, you get more on the what shelf?
You've been running away from your whole life.
Okay. So spatial compression of plasma. Are we talking the plasma from like in the human body, or are we talking about the
plasma the on the screen?
Extra material, spatial in orbit, like the Aurora Borealis plasma looking.
I was thinking more the plasma that you see in plasma TVs.
I don't know. Do you know? I don't
know. Mystery guest knows. She knows all about science.
She knows?
Yeah. Tell us.
Oh, I don't know all.
Do you know about
those.
The recipe for, what is it? The spatial plasma?
Compression.
Spatial plasma compression. I'd like to know the recipe for spatial plasma compression. Is there any oregano in that?
Spatial plasma compression?
Spatial plasma compression. That's a good name for a band.
Is that like you take gold and then you subject it to like lasers and you can make a mini black hole? So then you add that to the equation, so you get the compression in order to get...
Wait a minute, if you put lasers on gold, you get a black hole?
Sounds biological.
You can take a small amount of gold, and I forget the number of lasers, but the whole thing is you need enough lasers to simultaneously cover the surface of the gold. So that it shrinks it down, and you get a mini black hole.
But why do lasers shrink gold?
I forget the mathematical relevance, but I read it in an article recently, and they were talking about that. So they were thinking about trying to create, if sarin didn't produce what they were looking for, they were going to try to contain
sarin?
Sarin collider.
Okay, the collider. Okay, yes.
If they couldn't get the particles that they were looking for, they were thinking that if they created a mini black hole that they can control... Like they can control a mini black hole.
Yeah, a mini black hole.
Sure,
that they
why
can
not?
Control.
You're gonna put it under the glass, like in the Danish section. So
yes,
there it is, the mini black hole.
The mini black hole.
You need to. Oh, what was the stupid?
Dunkin' Donuts is selling them.
What was the sci-fi movie where they had
mini black hole?
They had the little black hole that was suspended. They used something so it didn't touch anything, because if it couldn't touch anything,
if you eat a mini black hole, that'd be good diet. You know, you could just eat the mini black hole and just suck up anything you eat. And you never gain any weight.
There you go. It might suck up your whole insides, and then you would just implode.
I snuck to get...
Instead of like when you go to Taco Bell's and
you explode,
you could implode.
You could implode.
You could sneak that into the Taco Bell.
So tell me if you recognize this. This is a somebody did a version of something...
TV show theme.
Yes, it is.
But it's kind of taken out of context in the reorchestration.
No, well, the reorchestration is pretty accurate.
Parts
of it in terms of like what you used to hear on the intro. But this was part of the theme.
McCabe and...
No. Joe, it's... Why would I ask you about McCabe and Mrs. Miller?
I don't know.
Just think Joe Basiri.
I don't know. I give up.
Cole Shack, the Night Stalker.
Oh, yeah?
It's on the DGM Collection, Spring 2018. For the old folks. So, you didn't recognize that?
No.
All right, how about if you recognize this?
Why? Are we playing the guessing game?
Yeah, we're playing the guessing game.
Today on Night Shift.
All right, no, we're not playing the guessing game. But I do have more music for you.
Because you have DGM.
I have DGM.
The Spring Collection.
The Spring Collection.
Now coming down the runway is a track that you'll probably not recall.
516-620-3602.
We should have somebody doing ESL while we're doing the show.
You could. Mystery guest says she knows how to do fake sign language.
Yeah, I did some fake sign language.
Is that like pig Latin?
It is. Except that you use your elbows. And you have a couple stories. I sent you a couple things there. You have.
Kidding me? The bugs in the ear thing?
Yes.
You really want me to
fascinating,
read that?
Fascinating.
All right, listen, everyone. Sometimes bugs crawl into your ears. I think if you really want me to read the story, you should call in and pledge.
Yes, pledge.
Pledge, please.
Pledge.
If you find the story disturbing, you can pledge. Mr. Guest, go ahead.
Honestly, yes. You need me to read this?
Disturbing. You need to know. People need to know.
A cockroach crawled inside a woman's ear, and it can happen to you. But another day, another story about an insect crawling into a person's ear and making itself at home. Katie Holly, a Florida resident, woke up in the middle of the night to a weird sensation in her ear, like someone had placed a chip of ice in my left ear hole. She wrote in an essay published in Self magazine. At first, her husband tried to remove the invader with tweezers, but that strategy wasn't successful, so they went to an emergency room. There, the doctor confirmed her suspicion. A cockroach was in her ear canal. To get the insect out, he first killed it with lidocaine, a numbing agent.
Wait. He sprayed lidocaine in her ear?
I don't know if he sprayed it, but he used it.
Okay, that's disturbing enough.
And killed it, and then removed it using tweezers. He numbed it to death. But in the days that followed, Holly had soreness in her ear and trouble hearing. When she returned to the doctor 9 days later, she learned that she still had pieces, including the entire head of the roach, lodged in her ear. If you're thinking gross, you're not alone.
Yeah, I'm thinking gross.
Unfortunately, insects crawling into ears appears to be more common than you'd hope. According to some doctors who talk to Self, not so common, though, that you should lose sleep over it. While there are no recent studies that aim to quantify the icky instances, one small study published in 2006 in the South African Medical Journal found that during a two-year period, the Tygerberg Hospital in Cape Town, South Africa, removed 23 insects and one tick. I guess a tick is not an insect.
That's like an insect a month.
From people's ears. Those insects included 3 beetles, 8 flies, and 10 German cockroaches.
Damn.
Germans.
How did the German cockroaches?
And in 2014, emergency room doctors in Taiwan found a batch of fruit fly larvae in a woman's ear canal. The 48-year-old had sought medical care because she had severe ear pain. Live Science reported at the time another case in Taiwan from 2012 involved a man who itched for 2 months because he had mites in his ears, a condition that's familiar enough to earn it a medical name. Otocariasis. Yeah. According to a study published in 2016 in the Journal of Otology, otocariasis isn't limited to mites. It can also be caused by ticks, the study said. If you do think you have an insect in your ear, take this advice from the National Institute of Health, the NIH.
Yeah, blow your head off.
Try keeping the ear with the insect in its point in it, with the insect in it. Keep the ear with the insect in it pointing upward in the hope it crawls or flies out.
That's what that kind of advice is. That's like in case of a nuclear attack, bend over, kiss your ass goodbye. Like, what, did you hear what the recommendation? Like, if you get a bug in your ear, tilt your head up, hoping it'll fly out.
What? Or pouring mineral olive, or baby oil into your ear to suffocate the bug
and let it
potentially float out.
Oh.
And as Holly did, the NIH recommends visiting a doctor, even
float
if you
out.
Pull out the insect on your own, because legs or other parts, such as the entire head of a cockroach, a German cockroach, could
and
be
they
left
stay alive
behind,
for like a few hours.
Cause infections.
You know, listen, if you have a girlfriend and she will take the cockroaches out of your ear, she's a keeper.
Interesting.
I'm just saying.
You got a cat for that.
Yeah, well, you know. Mr. Guest, any thoughts there?
Thoughts? Thoughts on what?
She can't hear you. She's got a cockroach in her ear.
Whole story disturbing. Joe, I sent you a couple stories. What do you got?
You did?
Yes, I did. And the phone number here, if you'd like to pledge, if you'd become a BAI buddy, which is what we'd love for you to do during this show, if you're enjoying the show and you now have learned what to do in case you get a bug in your ear, call 516-620-3602 and you can get a pledge. You can pledge $35 and get the Spring DGM collection. It's called Spring DGM 2018. Or you can go to our Facebook page, NITESHIFT, and there's a link right there. Or, like Joe said, if you become a BAI buddy, now if somebody hasn't done it already, he's going to do a matching BAI buddy pledge. $12 minimum. Call now, 516-620-3602. Mr. Guest, you're gesturing. You're gesticulating.
Sweatier.
So. You can put some tissues. You want some tissues for your ears?
No, that's okay.
You want some bugs?
No. No, thank you. I have some hemorrhoid cream. I'm going to rub
on it. Please. I'd like to, it'll open up.
Could robots be counselors? Early research shows positive user experience. There you go.
Wait, what?
Robots as counselors, showing positive experience.
I could see. All right.
New research has shown for the first time that a social robot can deliver a helpful and enjoyable motivation interview.
Joe, I think you should tell me your problems.
This is just like, I don't know. What's the security? What's it? So if you have client-patient privilege with a doctor, which is another human being,
yeah, but your data with the robot counselor is encrypted.
Oh yeah, tell that to Facebook.
Well, it's encrypted with better than Facebook time.
Are we sure?
Have you seen how everybody's signed on to Oath? Oath has made a lot of money recently. Let me ask you another question, Joe.
Yes. All right,
we'll finish the story because I have a question for you.
Not much to this story. There's no meat and potatoes.
No meat and potatoes. All right, so here's my question. Have you noticed in the last month and a half, you've been getting a lot more crank calls and robocalls?
No.
I have. I've been inundated. with robocalls in the last month.
I get one every couple of days, and then I just block the number.
Yeah, but have you always been getting one every couple of days?
No. It's been sporadic over the last couple of months.
All right, well, let me tell you why.
Why?
I'm going to tell you why. Why this is. Why have you been getting more robocalls? Okay.
Is it Trump again?
What do you think? Okay, you ready? Robocall limits. Now, this happened in March. I didn't know this, okay?
Well, there's a lot of things you don't know.
I didn't know this. But in March, and what I love about this is because now it's May, okay?
Right.
Now we're seeing what this happened in March. This happened in March, okay? For anybody listening, if you've been getting robocalls, because I've been getting a lot of them on my cell, and they do this thing where they send numbers that seem like it.
I'm Sandy.
Yeah, I get that. I also get
the numbers that look like a number you know.
They look like a number you know, or they look a little like your number.
Right.
Okay, you've seen that, right? Okay. And since March, okay, here's what happened in March. Robocall limits in U.S. set back by federal appeals court. An appeals court threw out part of a Federal Communications Commission's regulation aimed at reducing automated telephone solicitations, weakening a 2015 effort to squelch the scourge of so-called robocalls. The rule was aimed at calls generated by auto-dialing devices, but its language was too broad and could be construed to prohibit calls from any smartphone. The U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit ruled in a unanimous opinion on Friday. This is back on March 16th. It says consumers are already inundated by robocalls and will be hit by even more unwanted calls. Maureen Mahoney, a policy analyst for Consumers Union, the advocacy division of Consumer Reports, said in an emailed statement, "Unwanted calls, including robocalls, are the top consumer complaint to the FCC, with more than 200,000 such comments received annually, according to the agency. Some private analyses estimate that U.S. consumers receive about 2.4 billion robocalls per month. The FCC's 215 rule would have extended a law originally intended to deal with hundreds of thousands of telemarketers into one constraining hundreds of millions of everyday callers." The three-judge panel wrote, and then this is what they wrote here. It says, because the FCC's rule of any uninvited call or message from a device is statutory violation, regular smartphone users could face a $500 penalty for calls, such as inviting a person to a party without first getting consent to contact them, the judges said. Now, when has that ever happened? When has anybody ever violated by sending an invitation and gotten it? That's just never happened. It's so ridiculous.
But they're saying calling. So if you picked up the phone and called somebody.
No, they're saying if you did like a group text, basically,
yeah,
that you could, you're violating this law. No one's ever been prosecuted or brought up on any charges for that. No one. No one's ever complained about getting group text.
If you got a stupid friend, you just block their number.
Exactly. Thank you. Okay. And it goes on. It says, because the FCC's, they said the rule was passed under Democratic leadership at the FCC, current Republican leadership welcomed Friday's ruling. As the court explains, the agency's 2015 ruling placed every American consumer with a smartphone at substantial risk of violating federal law. This is what Ajit Pai said in an emailed statement as a commission member, and he dissented from the FCC's 2015 vote. The rule exposed companies to liability for simply attempting in good faith to communicate with customers who previously provided valid consent to be contacted. Now, you know what? Okay, an ounce of prevention. Okay.
Yeah.
No one's complaining about companies that are calling saying, hey, how do you like our product? Or, hey, people are complaining about robocalls. Okay. So I'm just going to read the lesson and then I'm going to read to you what's gone on in the last 2 months. All right. So it says here, this is a huge win that allows American businesses and consumers to communicate with each other, says Helgi Walker, a Gibson Dunn partner, in an emailed statement. The decision will help avoid increasingly onerous class action of liability. Okay? Meanwhile,
I'm not buying it.
Dude, this happened. This has already happened. This is old news. So now, okay, let me tell you what's going on with robocalls now. Because what brought this to mind was reading about the excuse me, increase in robocalls. I'm going to put that in and just bring that up for you here, Joe. Stand by. Here we go. That was in March 16th. Here we go to May. Okay, what's the date here? Today, what is today, Joe?
Today is May 7th.
Actually, okay, it's May 8th, this article is from May 6th. It says here, and this is from New York Times. It says, it's not just you. Those pesky robocalls, at best annoying disturbances, and at worst costly financial scams are getting worse. In an age when cell phones have become extensions of our bodies, robocallers now follow people wherever they go, disrupting businesses, meetings, church services, and bedtime stories with their children. Though automated calls have long plagued consumers, the volume has skyrocketed, reaching an estimated 3.4 billion in April. According to UMail, which collects and analyzes calls through its robocall blocking service, that's an increase of almost 900 million a month compared to a year ago.
Wow.
So there it is. Federal lawmakers have noticed a surge. Both the House and Senate held hearings on the issue within the last 2 weeks, and each chamber has either passed or introduced legislation aimed at curbing the abuses. Now, meanwhile, why did they roll back what they had? Okay, they're saying that it was, so that things can't be misconstrued. Meanwhile, they opened the doors to all these freaking people calling. 900 million in a month.
I don't know what to tell you.
It's just, you know, from where I'm sitting, it's outrageous. So,
it's a Trump era life for us. And we used to have it tough. But now the wheel is on his way, changing things almost every day.
I'm sorry. 516-620-3602. $35. Spring DGM. Order it. All right, I have some other stuff I want to play for you, Joe, just to see what you think. I sent you one more story, Joe, didn't I?
Let me look.
Sure. You think we should take a call?
I don't know. I didn't see it ringing.
I think somebody who... The phone number here, if you want to call, if you've pledged, is 347-335-0818. That's 347-335-0818. That's only if you've made a pledge. If you can call and say, hey, I've pledged, I have the right to talk. You can call. You can say something. If not, you should make a pledge. Become a BAI buddy. 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. Or go to give to That's a number two. Give to WBAI.org. You should know this by now. Did you get the other one there, Drew?
Yes. Yes.
I think that's kind of fascinating. You heard about this, right?
Your genome may have already been hacked.
Talk to me.
Law enforcement announced the possible capture of a long-sought serial killer shortly after it was reported that police had used public DNA database to...
Wait. Pause. Public DNA database.
Yes.
Did you have any idea that there was such a thing? You knew this. Okay.
Yes, all right, because a lot of the people that they're, like, criminals that they're arresting now, in addition to, you know, doing the fingerprinting thing, they're doing swabbing. There was a whole lawsuit about it in L.A., but then they were talking about, well, California, and then they were talking about how, well, you know, the National Registry and trying to track down serial killers and
Wow. So eventually everybody's DNA will be registered at birth.
If you don't, well, maybe. I don't know about that.
I could see that. Go ahead.
Soylent Green is made of people! This extraordinary event highlights
extraordinary.
That when you send off a cheek swab to one of the private genome companies, you may sacrifice not just your own privacy, but that of your family and your ancestors. Look at that. It's crazy, man. It's crazy. In a time of widespread anxiety over the misuse of social media, Americans should also be concerned over who has access to their genetic information.
Access to your genetic information.
Yes. For-profit genome testing companies like 23andMe make money in part by selling anonymized genomic data.
Now, there's money in that?
Yeah, it's just like reselling your data.
But how do you make money? Okay, all right, you sell the genomic data.
Right.
To who, and what do they do with it?
They keep it on file, and if, like, police ask to run, like, you know, like they see on TV where they do the face thing and blah, blah, blah. And
no, I don't know what you're talking about.
They're trying to track people down. Like, they now have the face recognition software.
That I know.
They're also doing genetic testing as well and genetic profiling.
And so if you somehow give your genetic material to somebody.
Right.
All right, go ahead.
In one study, researchers could re-identify 5 of 10 peoples as well. Go back. Where'd it go? Okay. Orphan related. Human share about, I don't know. I lost where it was.
You lost your place, Joe?
Yeah, because it went away.
How'd it go away, Joe?
I
just hit the link again.
Touched one of the highlighted words. Synchronized genetic data.
Thank you. did you find your place, Joe?
Somewhere out there. Kinda, maybe.
Where is that? Financial services industry offers a cautionary tale for the customers of the genome industry. Banks at a highly regulated and supposed to provide state-of-the-art protection, yet they have been hacked. Compared to financial institutions, genome companies are lightly regulated. Eventually,
but what's a genome company? When do you send your genetic? You mean like these companies that are doing your
ancestry, 23andMe,
ancestry.com? Okay, right.
Right. Or more of them will be.
And they
be
have no
hacked.
Regulations. And so they have your genetic data.
Right.
Interesting. How is that stored?
Well, here's the thing. Once the data is processed, they give you a link where you can look at the test results online.
Interesting.
So that could be hacked.
It could be hacked.
Yes.
Have you done the test?
No, my sister did it.
And?
Where
are you? What are you? What are you?
20-something percent Mediterranean.
Okay.
20-something percent Southern European.
Okay. Where is the Southern European?
I don't have the map. I just
okay.
And then somewhere in there, we were 4% Jewish.
4% Jewish. So you're
everybody's got a little Jew.
They got a little Jew in you. All right, and any African or black or
well, Northern Mediterranean, the Southern Mediterranean is the whole coast of Africa and Morocco.
So you got a little black in you.
Yes, exactly.
Some people have thought you were Black Joe.
I know, I've heard.
Black Joe.
Black Joe.
Babyface Black Joe. Interesting. Well, you are still tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI. I'm going to play some of the
DGM
for you because I want you to
appreciate it.
Appreciate and appreciate make a pledge. But you know what I brought with me, Joe?
Baby
first of
Jesus?
All, I wanted to talk to you last week about Avengers. We didn't get to talk about Avengers.
No.
But we can talk about it now because it's been out. But what did you think of it?
I thought it was a very well-made movie, and to quote the girl that was coming out behind us, felt like it was attending a funeral.
Yes, there's a lot of death in the movie.
Yeah.
Do you think they're all dead? Do you think they're going to come back? Do you think they're interdimensional, or they just turned to confetti?
Well, part two doesn't come out till next summer.
Correct. But Ant-Man and Ms. Marvel come out before that.
Right.
And Ant-Man, I believe, takes place slightly in the past, and Ms. Marvel takes place 30 years ago.
Right, but they also do have... They did say that there were going to be teaser scenes.
Well, the end of the Avengers bridge. Has the teaser.
Yeah, well, you know. But, you know, it only had one.
Yes, it did.
It was a very depressing one also. Which also bridged the gap between the Marvel movies and Marvel TV.
Oh, really?
Because the one girl that was with Nick Shield...
Right.
She's from Agents of Shield.
Nick Fury.
Nick Fury, sorry. She was with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yes.
So I kind of... I got bored with the show because it started to get into like that whole other side of the Marvel Universe with the other alien superpowers and stuff and whatnot. And I was like...
A little X-Filey?
A little bit, but you know, and I was just like... I'm a Marvel purist, you know what I mean?
Okay, what does that mean? You only like the 60s, 70s?
The original superheroes, Hulk, Thor, Captain America, Panther,
the Stan Lee
Cage.
Creations, right.
Yeah, that whole era.
Okay.
You know, and this started to get into when they... And I like the X-Men. But then there was
you like X-Force and all that?
Well, that's funny because Ryan Reynolds has been saying that he's not going to do another Deadpool movie. He's going to do an X-Force movie.
That's what he's been saying, yeah.
Yes, so... And he can pull it off.
Let's see how this one does.
So, if it's anything like the last...
Are you going on Thursday?
Well, Thursday, yeah.
There's a screening on Thursday. You got it.
But doesn't it open on Friday?
Maybe. I think it opens next week. I think it opens on the 18th.
You know, there's not that many movies opening this month. There's only
They were giving Avengers a wide berth.
You know, but I mean, like, there's like only like 4 or 6 movies opening this month.
So just back to the Avengers. So you thought it was good. You thought it had come full circle. Do you think it worked?
I did. You know, I thought it was very well made. It was epic.
It was definitely epic.
You know? And because the way they paced them out and everything, I think that there was... they didn't have to do a lot of explanation. We all knew the characters. We all knew the universe. So they
yes,
could just dive
could just
right
dive
in.
Dive right in, yes.
Yeah. So...
Well, I definitely thought it worked. I mean, I didn't have huge, huge expectations. But it's hard to believe it's been 10 years, Joe,
yes.
since Iron Man.
Yep.
So in honor of that, I decided to bring my interviews that I did from the very first Iron Man.
Mm.
They're very brief. But I have Rob Downey Jr. and Jeff Bridges from the very first Iron Man. Mm. Do you think people will pledge?
I'm hoping. I believe there is some good in humanity.
There is some good left in the universe. Well, please make a pledge. 516-620-3602. This is from back in the day.
Test complete. Preparing to power down and begin diagnostics.
Tell you what. Do a weather and ATC check. Start listening in on ground control.
Sir, there are still terabytes of calculations needed before an actual flight is advised.
Jarvis, sometimes you gotta run before you can walk. Ready? In 3, 2, 1.
And it's like a dream.
So let me ask you, first of all, what do you think of the first Iron Man? And what, two questions, what do you think of the first Iron Man? And what are your top 3 Marvel movies?
Well, I like Doctor Strange.
Okay, I like Doctor Strange too.
Because it was different.
Yeah.
I liked Ant-Man. It was different also.
Okay.
And I think the only ones that really, I guess, set the tone and put the pin in the map that the other films followed was the Iron Man movies. Because even once they got the Hulk back and Thor and everything else followed that kind of formulas, you know, until Infinity War. So and Ant-Man was a little bit different and Doctor Strange was a little bit different. So,
well, I think that's the smartest thing that Kevin Feige's done, is that allowing, just like each character's book would have a different artist, a different writer, mm-hmm. would have a different feel. They've allowed all these characters, even though they're in the same universe, to be different genre of film. Where one's an action comedy, one's more, you know, Winter Soldier is more like a political thriller. You know, each one has a different tone, and I think that's what keeps it fresh. That's why, whereas all of DC is all dark, you know, after Dark Knight, and it doesn't work for every character.
Well, you know what the difference is? Look at it from this point of view. The people, there are very few humans placed in fantastic situations in the DC universe.
Okay.
Whereas, you know, when you look at the Marvel universe, the majority of them are the common man who is played, and there's only really one god in the whole Marvel universe, and that's Thor. You know, where in the DC universe, you got Wonder Woman, you got Superman. I mean, the only one who's the common man really is Batman.
Well, that's true. Well, you know, the thing is, I think what Stanley was doing in the 60s, his the whole thing, and again, I remember seeing articles about the articles written about, you know, what made the Marvel comics so popular in the 60s. And it was that they were different, that he would take characters, they were superheroes with problems, you know, like real problems, not like, you know, Superman's turned green, but like real problems that the heroes faced, whether they're in high school or their marital problems or whatever it is. And that was the revolutionary thing of making them more grounded.
Plus, any of us could be a Marvel superhero.
Right, that's the point. Yeah.
Because, you know, the Fantastic Four got exposed to whatever that radiation was, you know.
Right.
The Hulk was the gamma rays.
Right.
You know, so you could be a Marvel superhero.
Yes, you could. You could get bitten by a spider.
And
or you could have a roach crawl in your ear.
Exactly.
Then you're a superhero.
And hear bugs talk.
Radioactive. Yes, exactly. You could be Bugman.
Bugman. As opposed to Ant-Man.
Exactly.
I mean, and even like when you look at Jessica Jones, Luke Cage, Iron Fist, again.
That's the 70s Marvel.
Yeah, and even Daredevil. You know,
yes,
they're all,
that was still the 60s.
So they're all common people who right. were exposed to something and found themselves in extraordinary circumstances.
This is true. Whereas they are just extraordinary people like Aquaman or, mm-hmm. or Superman or Wonder Woman
right,
or
right.
Captain Marvel.
There were very few. The Green Hornet. Not the Green Hornet. The Green Lantern.
Well, Green Lantern, he got a
was
ring.
A normal guy. Flash.
Right. He had an accident.
Yeah, you know, but everybody else, you know, were aliens.
Essentially. Essentially.
You know? Yeah.
So you were not really a DC fan, period.
No, and then it was DC or Marvel the one that who relaunched the universe first with the new 52? Did that come before or after Marvel was doing their all-girl line?
You know, I don't know, because Marvel's reinvented itself several times. I mean, Infinity Wars is from the 90s.
Right.
So,
and that gave us Lady Hawk, who became the yes. female Thor.
Yes.
That gave us...
She-Hulk.
She-Hulk, and it gave us... I'm trying to think. There were two other ones. Oh, the Falcon became Captain America.
Right, right.
So...
Well, you know, it's interesting because I think a lot of those things may happen in the movies, you mm-hmm. know, if they follow the comics, as they go into phase 3, I guess it is, or phase 4. And I'm also curious, though, why do you think the DC movies have not done that well? I think it's because they keep going dark and they shouldn't. And some of the characters are just plain silly, like Green Hornet. But what's your take?
You know... Because, again, it comes back to the fact that you can suspend your disbelief in the Marvel universe, and when you're watching a DC movie, it tries to be too much of a Greek or Roman tragedy, you know, and everything is always back on Superman or it's back on Batman. Whereas, look what happened when they did the Wonder Woman movie; it broke the mold and it was a big success. And it was a change in the game.
Well, you know, everything comes back to Tony Stark in the Marvel Universe.
Yes and no.
A lot more than in the comics.
But, you know, Banner had nothing to do with Tony Stark. And,
no.
Thor has nothing to do with him, nor Guardians of the Galaxy, nor Doctor Strange, nor, you know, I can keep going on and on and on. Miss okay. Marvel, Captain Marvel.
I loved Captain Marvel. I was a Captain Marvel
fan.
But
he had nothing to do with the Tony Stark universe.
No, this is true. But in the comics, forget the comics. The comics, nobody had anything to do with Tony Stark except Tony Stark.
And the only thing.
But
Tony...
they in the comics, they've given him everything. It's he who gives technology to the Avengers. It's he who gave Spider-Man a suit. It's he who.
Well, the new suit.
Yeah. Even the first suit, he brought it to him. He brought him a new suit. Remember.
Mm.
All right, I'm going to play this interview with Robert Downey Jr.
Have you seen the Venom trailer?
I have.
He who doesn't watch trailers.
I don't watch trailers, but I was curious.
What did you think?
I just don't know why they're doing it.
I don't know why they had They have what's his name playing Venom?
Tom Hardy.
Yeah.
He seems like he's doing what he always does. It doesn't look like a hit to me.
No.
It looks like a bomb.
Bane as Venom.
Yeah, it just looks like Tom Hardy at this point. I've seen enough of Tom Hardy that when I see him, he's kind of doing Tom Hardy. And it's a shame because I thought he was really doing diverse work for a while. And I think in this, he's just kind of, you know, there's no real, from what I saw in the trailers, there's nothing, I really felt like I was seeing Tom Hardy do his thing.
Right.
And I didn't feel it was much of a stretch for him. That's my opinion. I mean, you know.
Well, we shall see.
We shall see. All right, so here's the interview with Rob Downey Jr., but we want you to pledge. 516-620-3602. Make a pledge. Please. Become a BAI bunny. You can do it for $10 to $15 a month. The beauty of it is that it's almost invisible. You can afford $15 a month. $25 a month really would be nice. $25 a month as a pledge. And over the course of the year, it's like $150. Joe, could you match that? $150.
$25 is not $150 a year.
All right, it's $300, but, you know, just doing the math. But so, $12.50 a month is $150.
Let's get somebody out there to pledge. Are you pledging? Are you listening to us?
516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. Or you can pledge $35. That's it. One time. Just get Spring DGM 2018. You ready for Rob Downey Jr.?
I'm ready.
I was aware of him, you know, in those magazine kiosks and stuff. But what I've been loving hearing lately is, well, Iron Man was always a second-tier superhero, this and that. And I'm like, operative word was.
Was there any hesitation in taking this? Was it something you thought, now it's time for me to be a superhero?
I met John and the guys down at Marvel, and then I realized that we were talking about this property. I'm in the hallway on the way out. I'm looking at these posters they have with their films that have done rather well. And the video game section, and the merchandising, and the kids' toys, and the books, and the things, and the online gaming. I'm going, wow, this could be cool. And then I was like, John, you know, I think I'm really the guy for this role. And he goes, yeah, I think you'd be perfect. I don't think it's going to happen. I said, well, I think it's going to happen. And let me know if it comes down to a screen test or something like that. It'd be a pleasure. And that's how it went down.
Now, for you, in the script, it's got four writers. What were the things about the script that made it work for you? Like, or what do you feel makes Iron Man work as a film?
Well, having the guys who had just done Children of Men was helpful. You know, they had kind of a dark sensibility, good story, and a sense of humor, too. But often it's not on the day on the set. You know, we would realize that what we had was a good scene and a good tag and we get this, but there wasn't. Now that we were really there and doing it, and as long as it was, you know, $165 million or something like that, it was going to go down the tubes for nothing if we didn't try to make something that was entertaining and cool. We would do what John and I try to do all the time anyway, no matter what kind of movie, which is enhance it and improvise and think of new ways to incorporate different kinds of sensibilities into it. I need this rubber band, thank you. A physical part was I'd been, for some reason or other, training for a couple months before, and I'd been in a martial arts for 5 years now, so I was kind of up to speed, but it wasn't. I figured if I was ever going to try to like look like I could actually be in shape, I might as well do it before I was too old to have it like be feasible or matter, you know, and it was a physically demanding part, so the training actually really helped a lot. Sometimes I think you just train to be able to survive what you're going to have to do on the job.
I'd understand that there was a lot of improv on set, especially by you. One sequence in particular is a press conference that begins with everybody standing and then ends up with everyone sitting down. And tell me a little bit about that, because from what I understand, that was your idea.
Well, what happened is they lit it one way, and I came in, and I said, uh-oh, John's like, Downey, what is it now? We got to shoot something. And I said, why? I hate the scene where it's like, Mr. Stark, Mr. Stark. And they're all standing up in the crowd, and I see this scene, and I hate it already. I've seen the scene. And he goes, all right, what do you want to do? I say, well, what if... And this also starts from the scene before where, you know, originally Tony says, Pepper, I'm back, and I want to have a press conference. Whereas I was like, I'm not going to say that. I'll say some other stuff and then mix that in with it, but I'm not going to come out and go, God damn it, Pepper, it's time for a press conference. Because I go, what does he think what he has to say? I don't even think he knows what he's going to say. So anyway, so I came in and I said, look, there's two things I want. I want a cheeseburger, because it's the truth, I hear, when people get out of the joint or come back from long stints, and that's what happened to me after we did this world tour. I came back from the Waldorf. They go, anything, Mr. Negative? I said, I don't know, two things. I want a cheeseburger. Anyway, I don't know. And I said, no, and I'm going to have a press conference. So he got what he wanted, and I didn't have to hate it.
Tell me a little bit about working with Jeff Bridges. Was that one of the other great things about working on this movie?
No, it's great, too, because, you know, Jeff came in, and he would, like, be like, guys, we should improvise on the scene. And we're, like, really like shooting in 2 weeks. We're, like, still figuring out what the sequences are. And we got two Raptors, and he's fighting the F-22s. I'm like, I don't know. What? How? Why? And Jeff's like, look, I got this thing, this Alan Watts lecture. I downloaded it on my iPod. We should, like, check. It's like 2 hours and 10 minutes. And anyway, he wound up really, really bringing us to where we felt like we had permission to do what we all wanted to do anyway, which was get to know each other, talk about this stuff. He said, I'm not fixing to show up here and be like that two-dimensional bad guy. So as it happens, you know, he's kind of like, you know, the dude meets Dr. Doom. I mean, it's awesome, you know. We talk about that tokamak reactor, and we said, what is the tokamak? Every time we got to a thing, we were like, what does that mean? And we're like, oh my God, no, let's go to the origin story, go to the thing. We're like, wait a minute, should we move in? But the tokamak reactor is the thing they built to shut the hippies up, but as it happens, it winds up saving his life. So it's hard to say what has value at the end of the day when you're in the clinch. And it was really just some of my favorite stuff because, you know, I've come up and I'm a little younger than Jeff, but he's always been someone who I've seen have this very interesting, balanced career. He's a national treasure.
Sort of interesting, no?
Yeah,
it's hearing interesting. It's interesting to hear him, like, at that time, who knew it was going to be 10 years later, he'd be richer than he's ever been.
And as old as Jeff Bridges was
back then. Back then, exactly.
Looking
exactly.
Better than Jeff Bridges. But.
Yeah. But Jeff Bridges was good. He was really perfectly cast in there. And he was bald. He was whatever his name was. He was wearing some kind of suit or something.
Yep.
I think it's interesting because I think Favreau brought the perfect blend to the Marvel Universe in that Jon Favreau is a good director because he's funny. But he also has a lot of heart. All his films have a lot of heart. And I think that that's really the thing that the Marvel movies have over the DC movies. They're a lot more fun, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
And they always have a heart. They really have a heart. And I think that he set the tone to that. Do you agree or disagree?
No. In fact, for me, the only thing missing in Infinity Wars, because if you think about everybody that was there, it's like you needed that Jon Favreau cameo.
Right. Happy Hogan did not show up, yes. Yeah, but they had a lot of what's-her-face, Gwyneth Paltrow.
Yeah, in the beginning.
Yes, in the beginning.
So.
But I thought the Thor with Raccoon.
Yes, Rabbit. Kept calling him Rabbit.
That was probably some of the best stuff. But for me, the best thing about the movie, I talked about this a little bit when you weren't here, is that seeing all these characters get to meet each other, you know, because you've known them, in their movies, in their environments, and now for them to meet, you know, it was kind of fun to see Thor meet, you know, Star-Lord.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was fun because you also get the sense that as people, they're both kind of big personalities, you know, and Star-Lord meeting Tony Stark was, you know, kind of classic. So that stuff was really the most fun. Did you see it in 3D or just regular?
3D.
Oh, you saw it in 3D. How was it in 3D? I didn't see it in 3D.
But the problem for me is, regardless, Disney does, and Marvel, always does spectacular 3D, but what happens is, you know, it's like your brain shuts it down and you got to remind yourself you're watching 3D, you know, because you get caught up in everything, and it's like the 3D just like a blinder goes on, and it's like, and then maybe there'll be like this really cool scene and you're like, oh shit, I forgot it was in 3D.
Right. Well, I mean, it's sort of, that's the nature of it, I would think. I mean, it can't be like, you know, taking away from the narrative in terms of the, like in Second City where they're leaning into the camera.
And I thought, for me, the funniest moment in the film was Peter Dinklage as the dwarf. The giant dwarf.
That was very funny. That was funny. There were a lot of things I thought that were pretty clever about the film. I mean, it's very different in tone than the Winter Soldier, which is probably my favorite. But I think they handled it well, the two of them.
The Russo brothers.
So you liked Ant-Man, you liked Doctor Strange, of course. To me, that's right in your wheelhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And what was and Iron Man was your, those are your three favorites.
Yeah, and each Iron Man film got better along the way. So
I can't disagree with that. I liked all the Iron Mans. The last one was at three.
Yeah,
the one by what's his face, Shane Black. The phone number, if you're enjoying this music, if you're enjoying the show, if you're enjoying the conversation, make a pledge. Become a BAI buddy. You can call 516-620-3602 and just make a pledge. Being a BAI buddy, when, if you don't know what that is, that's basically you're a subscriber. You are committing to a year's worth of, you know, $10 a month, $20 a month, $25 a month, and that's it. And you're supporting the station. And here's the deal. If we get enough BAI buddies throughout this marathon, we can cut literally days off fundraising.
Yes.
Wouldn't that be fantastic? Wouldn't it be great if we only had to fundraise for like 10 days or something because there's all these BAI buddies? You can help make that happen.
And let us not forget that tax...
And it's tax deductible. That's right.
Donations are one of the things that the new tax plan is not taking away.
It's not taken away.
If you itemize, you can deduct it.
Itemize it, deduct it. So make your tax-deductible pledge for WBAI. Become a BAI buddy right now. Right now. Don't wait. Don't think, yeah, I thought about it. Do it right now. 516-620-3602 or go to give2wbai.org. Or if you're enjoying the music, you can go to our Facebook page. There's a link right there. Wow, I'm seeing the story here, Joe. London's legendary AIR studios are up for sale.
You've AIR?
Heard of AIR. You've heard of AIR. It's founded by, what's his name? I'm going to read the story because it's kind of fascinating. We're in a different world now. It was founded by late Beatles producer George Martin. London's AIR studios has recorded the likes of Paul McCartney and Adele, as well as countless film and TV soundtracks. Now it's on the market. It's one of the UK's largest and most storied recording facilities. AIR studios have been put on the market by co-owners Richard Boutte and Paul Wolfe. Famed producer George Martin founded the original AIR studios in London's Oxford Street in 1969, but moved the business to its current-day facility, Lyndhurst Hall, in 92, where it has since hosted the likes of Sir Paul McCartney, Katy Perry, Adele, and George Michael, as well as countless scoring sessions.
You know, at the end of the day, did you see the documentary about Tower Records called "And This Too Shall Come to Pass"?
No, but I read about it. I wanted to see that. Where is it? Is it on Netflix? Where is that?
It's on one of the like HBO or Showtime or Stars.
No, I wanted to see that.
But the one thing it tells you that, you know, you get so...
Wait a minute. Maybe I did see it. Go ahead.
But with the valuable lesson is that when you create a company and it grows so large and you get so caught up in the day-to-day.
Yeah, I did see this documentary, yeah.
You know, that you don't have the, you're not looking in the rearview mirror to see how to adapt and change as times begin to change.
Right.
And as such, same thing that happened to AOL. It got so big trying to maintain and be its own entity, it didn't keep up with the new technologies.
It didn't look in the rearview mirror.
Yahoo?
Same thing. Yahoo's almost gone now.
Yep.
Almost gone.
Who still uses Hotmail?
Who still uses AOL besides me?
I got people who send Yahoo emails and Hotmail and AOL.
Byron uses Hotmail.
I'm like, give me a break.
But he's got Juno, too.
He has Juno.
Whew. Juno. Whatever happened to Juno?
Is that still a thing?
He's still got Juno.
Got
Juno.
All right. There you go.
I never got Hotmail, Juno, or Yahoo.
The one thing that I'm not a believer in now is, and I understand to some degree, it's a convenience. Google Drive, some of the stuff you want to sync so you don't have to carry stuff around with you.
You're a Google proponent, Joe.
But I'm just saying, I'm not 100% down with having everything on the cloud. You know what I mean?
I do.
So, I mean, there are things that I'm working on that are in transit, per se. Where there's information that I need to have access to in order to do things that I need to do on a daily basis, but everything else is like on my hard drives, you know?
Yeah, I do know, of course.
I don't want it up there.
Listen, I'm not a proponent of the cloud.
Nope.
Okay, I'm not a proponent of the cloud for a number of reasons, nope. but no, I'm not feeling the whole cloud concept.
And that's what, you know, I was a big supporter of. You know, and I always loved Adobe Creative Suite, but their newest version is a cloud-based platform.
It's all cloud-based and it's subscription.
Right, and it stinks because it moves so damn slow.
Of course, because you're having to, depends on the speed of your internet connection, which is ridiculous.
It is. I mean, and so you go out and you buy these fast computers previously, so you have the rendering capability, and now you're inhibited.
You got to wait for the cloud.
Right. It's ridiculous. They should have given you that option.
I'm still using the CS6 or whatever it was before, just the pre-cloud.
Well, and then you know what the other thing that's going on? A good friend of mine took me to a conference that Adobe had in New York about 6 months or more ago. The Adobe Photoshop component is going to go away as we know it because they're moving everything to a vector-based platform.
You mean more like Illustrator?
Yes.
Why?
Because they feel that there's more functionality to that, and you can do more with it. So they're going to be doing away with
It's interesting.
The pixels.
It's interesting because vectors are like there are apps now,
right?
They're probably for Android, but where it'll take your face and it'll animate your face.
Oh yeah.
Soon as you do it, you see it just takes all the vectors of your face. And it figures how to animate your face.
Yep.
And if that technology is for free in your phone,
imagine what they're going to be doing.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm with you. That's interesting. It's fascinating.
But you know, there's just still a basis for having the pixel stuff because there are so many other... We don't need... You know, sometimes you just need to do something very simplistic and quick kind of thing. So I don't know why they don't have that still as a even if it's a scaled back component, you know. And so at some points, like friends of mine, believe it or not, when they just need to resize something or crop something quick now, they're using either the Google Photo Suite because that's still pixel-based, or they're using...
Photoshop's still fixed pixel-based. It's not, it hasn't switched over yet.
No, the next version coming out will be. But the other thing is that... Paint. Microsoft Paint. They just want to...
Is that back?
It's still a part of it. So basically, you get a big file, you want to downsize it, you want to crop it a little bit, bing, 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 no big thing, and then you click Save As, and you can save as a PNG, a JPEG, whatever kind of thing.
There's a program called Graphic Converter that was like that.
Yeah, so it's just quick. So I can understand, you know, why maybe Photoshop is converting to that.
Yeah, because its basic functionality has been imitated by everybody else.
Yes, so... There you go, and that's
I don't know.
The world
vector based.
So what do you?
Photo.
What do you want to come over my house May 15th?
What are you doing?
It's the premiere of Fahrenheit 451.
Oh yeah, you know they're having an event tomorrow.
They are.
HBO is doing something. I don't know if you have. Do you have an HBO contact?
No, I don't. But
something special tomorrow.
I'm gonna die tomorrow. So
what do you think? Why are you gonna die tomorrow?
Because I've had a long weekend.
Oh, right, yes.
Doing the show tonight.
Yes, you did.
Got to be at work tomorrow.
Do you?
Gonna
crawl. Why can't you work from home? Can't you call in and say, "Hey,
because
listen, I'm
other people and I." But you want to know the world we created?
Yes. What was the kind of world we created?
So you know the business that I do.
Yes.
One of the things is that we have a component to our booking system called Stars. And Stars is a very antiquated DOS database that exists on the airline's platform for culling data about your clients.
All right, Joe, you're a travel agent, just for those who don't know.
Right. But this is very similar to anything anybody else does in terms of databasing and whatnot. Now, they're moving over to an XML-based platform. So what does that do?
Wait, what is it now?
It's a DOS.
DOS, okay.
Kind of thing. And it had this nice functionality into it. So 50% of the functionality is going away. They're creating a graphical view. Okay.
Wow.
And when they merge over, if information is not formatted in a certain way, it won't go over.
It won't go over. So why? It's like they're turning it all into a spreadsheet. Why?
Because of they want to be PCI compliant. So
what is PCI compliant?
PCI compliant is the storage of clients' personal data, like credit cards and security codes and all that stuff.
Doesn't that just make it easier when it's hacked to read through?
Well, it's a nice... So she who has no name has been creating these monster stars, which is the current an acronym for the program.
Okay.
With all this information that lines and lines and lines of just non-customer data that nobody's going to read anyway, like we have an after-hours desk. And so our drop-dead date is July 1st. And we have to take care of the daily business, and all this stuff needs to be updated so it can be integrated. She has never learned how to do the basic thing. All right, older people out there needing to learn Excel and Microsoft and whatever. But she is now trying to pay a third party to update the information. But the problem is that the third party is dealing with what needs to be done and has no familiarity with our little corner of hell in our business. And so she put me on the phone with this girl that's trying to help her today. And she's, oh, I looked at the things that you fixed. Yeah, I get that, and blah, blah, blah. Oh, and I did this. I was like, yeah, I was going to do that. I found out after I did it the first time that there needed to be some other modifications. I just haven't gotten around to it. And yeah, I'm looking at her things. I don't know. What do you mean? It's like, well, I don't know. How do I integrate this data? And there's no way to do it. What's important here? What's still pertinent? I was like, oh, don't ask me. I don't know. This is her doing. You got to ask her, kind of thing. And it's just like,
she doesn't know her ass from her elbow.
No, but the thing is, the valuable lesson to be learned here, you know, it's like Victor, my friend Victor Cohen, MFA teacher at SVA. Recently did a TED Talks, and he stole one of my lines, because when I got my previous Samsung Galaxy Note, and he's like, oh, what is that? Oh, you got a pen? Can I see it? I was like, this is really cool. He says, I like your phone. I said, it's not a phone. This is a tool that happens to have a phone.
Right, right.
I said, it's got all these other functionalities and stuff. I bought this not for it being a phone.
You stole that from Steve.
Well, and then
Jobs.
He did a TED talk, and he's like, "This is a tool," and I was like, "Victor, you owe me."
That's funny. You tuned to listen to Sponsored Radio. WBAI.
Yes.
The name of the show.
Night Shift. I am Kermit the Frog. Anybody wondering?
The feeling you're having.
It's not easy being green.
I sent you a really fascinating story, Joe. Like, wait, fascinating. Wait. Yes.
I was like, do you remember this?
Now, what is that?
That's the Hans Zimmer concert we saw.
Oh, wow. Oh, really? They videotaped it.
It's on Hulu. It's on Netflix.
Oh, no, I didn't. Yeah, oh, wow. Yeah, I remember that. Wow.
It was a year ago.
Wow.
I'd go see that again.
I would definitely see that again. Oh, listen, there's an Animaniacs concert coming up. Do you want to go?
Oh.
Animaniacs.
You know, they did that, I think, last summer out at
College
on Long Island.
You want to go with me?
When is it?
I'll tell you in a minute.
Because Lisa would really like to go.
Well, it's, you know, you'd have to.
It's time for Animaniacs.
All right. Da, 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 da,
da, da. You sent me another story?
Yes, I did. It's the 24th to the 27th.
Polka dot. Why not? Of what? May?
May.
Oh, she's going to kill herself.
Who?
Lisa.
Why?
Because she's going to L.A.
All right, well, you can tell her. You tell her how great it was.
I'm going with Mike. While you're away, I'm going with Mike to see the Animaniacs concert.
There it is.
There you go. You sent me another story. Is that the one about...
The Ticking Crystal.
Of a time crystal.
Yes.
Didn't I see that in Land of the Lost? Wasn't it?
Exactly, exactly,
table?
Exactly, exactly. Life is like science fiction.
The Ticking Crystal. And it's from Yale University. Physicists have uncovered hints of a time crystal. That's what Doctor Who uses, the crystal.
The time crystal.
Yes.
You can open that door, Joe, because it's stuffy in here.
Wait, let me finish. A form of matter that ticks when exposed to an electromagnetic pulse in the last place they expected, a crystal you might find in a child's toy. Wow. In a child's toy. Yale physicists looked for a signature of a discrete time crystal within a crystal of... Wow, I don't even... Monoaminonium phosphate?
Monoaminonium phosphate.
Yes. Yale physicists have uncovered hints. Yeah, I read that already. What, do you keep repeating yourself? Where's the rest of the story?
Are you talking to yourself, Joe?
No, I'm talking to my smartphone because it's acting really stupid. I like that one, right?
That's good.
The discovery means there are now new puzzles to solve, as is with science, in terms of how time crystals form in the first place. Ordinary... I'm missing something.
Time
here.
Crystals.
So, are they like...
Keep going. You know, it'll catch up.
The lithium crystals for...
Exactly.
Exactly. Ordinary crystals such as quartz are examples of three-dimensional ordered spatial crystals.
Three-dimensional ordered spatial crystals.
Yes, their atoms are arranged in a repeating system, something scientists have known for a century. You know, this is interesting because I was recently listening to this physicist who wrote a book, and he talked about the fact that the universe is experiential. It's not hard, fast kind of thing.
Okay.
He's like, the prime example is like a kiss. When a kiss happens, it happens in that moment in time and you experience. And it's not in the past, it's not in the present, it's in that moment. And so all of the things that we think of, like atoms, which we used to think as particles kind of thing, when we look at a atom now and we think in terms of the neutrons and we come up with theories and electrons, the theories say where we may experience them to be, but they may not necessarily be there when we look.
That makes sense. Okay, go ahead. That makes sense.
Kind of thing. So which it filters into.
Into the story. Yes, 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 yes.
So time crystals first identified in 2016 are different. Their atoms spin periodically, first one in one dimension and then in another, as a pulsating force is used to flip them. That's the ticking. In addition, the ticking in a time crystal is locked at a particular frequency, even when the pulse flips are imperfect. Then that basically means that plays into that rule, because if the flips are imperfect
flips,
then it might not be where you theoretically would expect it to be.
Or is the time exact then? The flips are imperfect.
Right. But the time is exact. So basically, you might... So even though it flipped and you see it go from one place, but you expect it another place, it doesn't mean it will necessarily show up there because the flip isn't perfect. So it's not placed dimensionally where it should be.
That's interesting.
So... there you go. I got my mind around that.
I don't know if I can completely grasp that. I think I...
See, but that's what makes this all dangerous. Because when we talk about time travel and stuff like that...
Yes.
If we can't... I can see how we could use that for space travel, time-space travel.
Right.
But if the flips are imperfect...
you could end up anywhere.
Right. It's like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and the Improbability Engine.
The Improbability Engine, right. You don't know where you're going to end up.
Or what you're going to end up as.
That's great. I love that, yeah.
So that's kind of cool. But the fact that it's a crystal, you know, then that gives some weight to what all these, you know, Wiccan, the crystals and they're pulsing and an energy and yada, yada, yada. So if you find, if there is... this time crystal that operates in four dimensions, and there needs to be some kind of there might be some kind of energy in some of the crystals that exist in our three dimension.
I would think that they'd have to be. It's probably part of the properties of a crystal,
and we may not know how to measure that yet
because we're not experiencing it.
Correct.
Just life
is like science fiction.
Like science fiction.
We've gotten very metaphysical.
Yes. Phone number here is 516-620-3602. You can make a pledge. You can become part of WBAI. You can become part of public radio. You can become part of Night Shift. Make a pledge right now during Night Shift. If you're enjoying the music, you can call 516-620-3602. You can make a pledge for the Night Shift DGM Spring Collection. DGM stands for Damn Good Music. And we give it to you free for a $35 pledge. Over 57 tracks. So it's really 60 tracks. Over 5 hours of music.
It's like that crystal.
It's like that crystal.
Yes.
It's an imperfect flip.
There may be more tracks there. It's just...
there are more.
They show up sometimes and then they're gone and who knows.
Or you can go to give2wbai.org. Or you can go to the Facebook page. You can make a pledge right there. It'll take you right to give2wbai, and you can make the pledge for the DGM right there on the page.
Do it now.
I'm sure that made you want to do it. Spring 2018, DGM. Make a pledge.
Thank you.
I also have my Jeff Bridges from 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah?
Should I play the Jeff Bridges? You want to hear it? Talk to him about being a supervillain.
You didn't talk to him about being the dude?
I never saw that movie.
You never saw? How could you not see? I mean, John Goodman, I know, Jeff Bridges.
I know. I've always heard it's great, but I've never seen it. Are you a big fan?
Yeah, Flea from Flea, Red Hot Chili Peppers.
I never saw it.
Hoffman, Julianne Moore,
John Goodman.
I mentioned him already.
Oh, okay.
Who the heck gets the Teltzes in it? Oh, Peter Stramori.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he plays one of the nihilists.
That makes sense.
Nihilist, man. Yes, we don't believe in anything.
That sounds like me.
My favorite scene. I don't know why I still lose it every time I see this scene. It's like they think he's somebody else and they break in on him in the bathroom. So he's sitting there and the whole thing is the dude is always drinking white Russians.
Okay.
So, and he's sitting there, he's like, what can I do for you? We need the money, Lebowski. We want the money. And it's like, yeah, if you don't, we're going to throw a ferret in the tub with you. And it's like, ferret? That looks like a weasel. No, it's a ferret, Lebowski. Give us the money. I don't have the money, man. And they throw the ferret in the bathtub right in his crotch kind of thing. And it's like he starts screaming and yelling and everything starts going everywhere. And
that's
like,
your favorite scene.
That's like, and then he's like, if you don't have the money, we're taking your rug. And it's like they steal his rug. And it's like,
is it like an expensive rug?
No, it's just, it's got like a couple of stains on it and stuff.
That's a bizarre thing.
It is. It's just weird. It's like, hey, dude, you know, like I'm trying to get the rug back because it kind of like made the room, you know? It wasn't a great rug, but it made the room. So, yeah. It's
That's
just,
a little strange. I'm just going to say.
It is very It's the Coen brothers, man.
Yeah, well, they're
early Coen brothers.
Yes. Did you like the Hudsucker Proxy?
I mean, I like Barton Fink.
I
like
Barton Fink, I did.
And
I like the first one.
Blood Money?
Blood Simple.
Blood Simple, that's right. Bill Paxton.
Yes.
Isn't that? The immortal Bill Paxton.
And what's her name, who is so great in After Hours? Whatever happened to her?
After Hours.
The actress from After Hours, she was in Blood Simple. No, wait, she wasn't in Blood Simple. Was she in Blood Simple?
Jennifer Jason Leigh?
No. All right, well then, she was in another movie.
I don't remember. I'll remember later. I did see a movie with Jennifer Jason Leigh this weekend. I've been trying to see it for a while, and it just finally showed up on one of the paid cable networks. Amityville Horror, The Awakening.
Oh, wow. She's in that? Why?
She's in it. Why? She's and a lot of other TV actors are in it, too.
Wait, isn't what's his name in it? The lead. Who's the male lead in that? What's his name from
Shameless? The redheaded kid who plays the Joker on Gotham. And
oh, okay, that's who's. I thought it was the
no
guy from. I forget the name of the movie.
And then the guy from
Watchmen.
The guy from that 70s show that played the father. He's
I never saw that 70s show.
So it's just it was bizarre. So. Very, very good. Did you see Rampage? Because he was in that movie.
I did see Rampage.
I liked it too. I thought it was fun.
It was fun. It was kind of Mighty Joe Youngish.
It was a movie in need of a drive-in.
Right, but that's, you know, you were talking earlier about, you know, the irradiated creatures that get big. That was a thing in the 70s. Food of the Gods. And what was the other one?
Poseidon Adventure.
No, they had no giant animals in Poseidon.
Yes, it did. The big fish. They go in the huge fish. Ernest Borgnine was in the Poseidon Adventure. Look it up.
Huge fish.
Yes, how much you want to bet?
Yeah, but that was not
not the Poseidon. Neptune Factor.
Neptune Factor. All right, well, that was the 80s. That was in the 70s. Neptune Factor. That's a terrible movie. That's like the 90s, actually. But no, I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about from back in the day where they had Food of the Gods, and you named another one earlier.
The Food of the Gods was a homage to like...
Day of the Animals. No, what was the other one?
Them...
No, well, them, that was the 50s.
That was the giant.
But in the 70s, they had another one. You named another one.
Oh, Prophecy?
Prophecy, yes.
The giant
mutated something.
Grizzly bear.
Yeah, that's another mutated animal.
Mutated thing. Animal.
Mutant! All right, so I'm going to play Jeff Bridges for you, and you can take a break, and we'll be back in 6 minutes.
So
So what made you want to take on this character, and what did you, what did you not want to do? What did you want to do with it? What did you not want to do with this character?
Well, I wanted to shave my head because I thought that'd be fun. I always wanted to. What did I want to do with it? Well, you know, really, what brought me to the party was wanting to play with Jon Favreau and Robert Downey, those two guys. And I thought, you know, in this genre, you know, comic book movie, I remember when I first heard about it and heard that Jon Favreau was going to be involved, that combination seemed so peculiar to me. I was curious to see what Jon's take on it was, and he told me what he had in mind, that he wanted to cast Robert Downey as Iron Man, and that sounded so odd to me and so intriguing, and that's why I'm here, basically. And as far as what I didn't want to do, what I did want to do with it, let me see, what did I want to do with it? Well, I wanted to shave my head. We just got that one out. What I didn't want to do with it.
Part of why I asked is because Rob Downey Jr. mentioned that he came and he said, I want to do this two-dimensional villain.
Something
on your iPod. And he said you helped create the tone of getting...
Yeah, I don't know about, you know, wanting to do things. I bring everything I have to the party, you know, and then they get to pick and choose, you know. I guess they're, you know, sometimes, you know, it's almost like a surfing or something. I don't know why that analogy came to mind, but it's like you're taking off on a wave and you gotta act, you know, kind of quick, and sometimes you'll think, you know, I want to turn. Oh no! By turn there, you know. So the mustache twirling would be like, oh, a misstep in surfing. Sometimes, you know, I figured, oh, you know, you don't want to do that. But you talk with the director, and he helps. You work as a team, and they kind of guide you, you know, along with it. Well, one of the things, this kind of was a roundabout way to get to your question, but one of the things I like about the movie in general is it's full of interesting themes. But it's not shoving a message down anyone's throat, you know. People who are kind of are anti-war have that sentiment. They'll look at the film and say, "Oh, it's a, you know, an anti-war film." Other people who are kind of gung ho and, you know, are kind of pro-war will say, "This is a pro-war film," you know. So there's a lot to be seen and gleaned out of this thing, and hopefully promote discussion, you know. So with my character, what I didn't want to, like you say, maybe this goes to your twirling of the mustache. I didn't want to make it so clean. Nothing is so clean like that. I think we all have selfless and selfish aspects of ourselves. And sometimes it's hard to differentiate which is the good guy and which is the bad guy, you know. I think with Obadiah, I think he thinks of himself as sort of a hero in a sense, you know, that, yeah, I'll be the bad guy, you can blame me, and I'm the reason that all this is in place. I'm holding this all together, and you can blame me all you want, and I can take it, because that's how tough I am.
I honestly thought at one point he was going to do the thing, oh, and by the way, I killed your parents.
Oh, well, yeah.
You know, because there's always, you know, superheroes always have the dead parents, you know.
What is the expression? You got to break a couple of eggs to make an omelet. You know, he's up for that. You know what I mean? It was a complicated relationship. I think, you know, one of the things I do sometimes to prepare for a role, and I did it in this one, is I write a history of my character. You know, and I kind of let it just flow out. You know, don't think about it too much. And what came out was that they had a kind of a father and son, you know, or an uncle, you know, nephew, you know, relationship. He kind of raised, I mean, my mind, the story that I had going on in my mind, that Obadiah, you know, sort of was his surrogate father that kind of raised him, you know, probably got him laid the first time, taught him how to drive, you know, took him out on, you know, adventures with him. As, you know, his father was, you know, too busy, and he would kind of assign Obadiah to do that for his son. So they had a very, you know, close relationship. But there was also a lot of jealousy there too. Yeah.
I want to ask a Jeff Bridges, the artist, question. You write, you draw, you take photographs, and you're a great actor. But each one of those, I kind of believe that every artist, you know, if they go into some of the medium, they'll achieve some level of excellence there as well. So how do these things feed you, like, or, and make you maybe more whole mm-hmm. to do all these different things and, you know, touch and do this and
yeah.
that?
I became an actor really through nepotism. You know, my father, Lloyd Bridges, had C. Hunt, you know, and he was pretty darn famous. And like a lot of actors, he loved acting and wanted to turn his kids onto it. I mean, he really wanted all his kids to, you know, thought it was worth going through any of the humiliation that you might have to go through or any of the hassles or whatever it might be. Disappointments and so forth. And whenever there was a part for a little kid in Sea Hunt, he would say, "Hey, you know, you wanna come and play with Dad?" And I said, he says, "Well, you know, you get to get out of school." Oh, okay. You know, that was the big turn on for me back in those days. So I kind of just fell into it. You know, it was like about, you know, a cobbler would bring his kid in to build some shoes or something, and that was kind of the thing with me. And so, just like, you know, most kids, I went through a period of, you know, maybe I don't want to do what my parents wanted me to do. You know, what else do I want to do? And so, I played music. I thought about being a musician, a photographer, an artist. And that lasted kind of late in my career. I mean, I had maybe done 10 films with that kind of thought, not knowing if I was going to really be an actor for the whole deal, you know. And this is kind of a long story, but you opened a big box here, but trying to see if I can truncate this thing. There was a turning point during The Iceman Cometh where I really didn't feel like doing the movie. I ended up doing it, had a great time, and it kind of made a shift in my thinking that, this is something I could do for the rest of my life as a career. And hopefully these other interests would still keep cooking, you know, that they wouldn't die. And they didn't, you know, they kind of hung around. And for a while they would be, I found them kind of distracting, you know. I would be working on my lines and all of a sudden get an idea for a song and find myself playing a guitar or drawing a picture or something like that. And I would be upset with myself, say, "No, get back to work." And then I came to realize that they're all connected, like you were saying, and that when you start to engage creatively, it shakes up all your juices and you start to express yourself and your ideas start to come out in all different ways. And now I don't suppress it. They kind of all inform each other. They all kind of work together hand in hand. And I find that, with music, I'll often, you know, do music in movies or draw, you know, in Fearless. I remember one day I found myself I don't know if you saw that movie, you know, but I found myself going out and buying a bunch of art material, papering my room with big sheets of paper and going at these pieces of paper with ink, but in character, sort of like an improvisation on another medium almost. And I went down to breakfast that day with Peter Weir and said, "Look what happened in my room last night." He goes, "Oh, these are great. These are in the movie." We'll put these. So those are, you know, incorporated in the movie. So they all kind of go together. That's a long answer. Sorry about that.
Joe Basiri.
Mike Sargent.
So I thought that was interesting. I think Jeff Bridges is an interesting guy. And it's interesting to hear his take on, how he came into acting and everything. And you are tuned. He is the dude. He does. He sounds like what all the shots I've seen of the dude, he sounds like that
guy. Was he drinking a white Russian during the interview?
No, he was not. But he easily could have been. You are tuned to listen to Sponsored Radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. We only have 26 minutes left of the show. So that means you only have a certain amount of time left that you can pledge.
Pledge to WBAI.
516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. Make a pledge right now for Night Shift. You can, for $35 pledge, you can get the DGM, which stands for Damn Good Music.
60 tracks.
Over 60 tracks.
Wow, it keeps growing.
It keeps growing.
It's like those electrons.
Exactly. And it's ticking.
Do I have to call TSA because it's ticking?
You have to call TSA because it's ticking. I did send you another story, though, Joe.
These stories do vex me. Another story. Should ethics or human intuition drive the moral judgment of driverless cars?
Now, before you even read that story, what's your thought on driverless cars? Do you think there's a future? Do you think people just do it? Do you think people want it?
I think to some degree people want it, you know. But it's the technology isn't there yet.
No, but it's coming.
But, you know, what is that leap that we need to make in order to get to where we need to be at this point? You know, is it AI? Is it what is it?
AI. It'll be like a Johnny Cab, like in Total Recall. So go ahead.
It'll turn it to be Wally.
Wally.
Let's see. Driverless cars will encounter situations requiring moral assessment, and new research suggests that people may not be happy with the decisions their cars make. Experiments designed to test people's reactions to a driving dilemma that endangers human life revealed a high willingness for self-sacrifice, a characteristic of the age of potential victims and swerving onto the side, save more lives, intuitions that are sometimes at odds with ethical acceptability behavior or political guidelines. Okay.
There
you go. A car can swerve to avoid hitting a motorcycle, but in doing so endangers other lives. How should it be programmed to behave?
Now, okay, because this is going somewhere interesting, because I want to comment on this. Go ahead.
When faced with driving dilemmas, people show a high willingness to sacrifice themselves for others, make decisions based on the victim's age, and swerve onto sidewalks to minimize the number of lives lost, reveals new research published in an open access journal, Frontiers in Behavioral Neuroscience. This is at odds with ethical guidelines in these circumstances, which often dictate that no life should be valued over another. This research hopes to inflate decisions about the way self-driving vehicles should be programmed to deal with situations that endanger human life.
Interesting. Well, I have a couple thoughts on it, but I need you to slide over there on your chair and open that door, because that door, it's just too stuffy in here. I pass out. Okay, thank you. All right, so here's the question, Joe. And it brings up an interesting point, because, you know, you can just leave it open. If a robot or a AI or a driverless car swerves to avoid hitting another car, but like I said,
a person on a motorcycle.
Well, let's say the person on a motorcycle, so it swerves to avoid what the oncoming thing, but there are a bunch of school kids on the side of the road. Does it take into account that? and could it possibly? And while, you know, does it come down to skill then, or does it come to that dispassionate, well, if, you know, I'll only kill three school kids versus, you know, whatever, a bus coming at me, you know, where do the decisions about what's the best move to make when, you know, not necessarily a Kobayashi Maru, but when both decisions, whether you hit it or you don't, are going to cause injury? And then who do you blame?
The needs of the many outweigh the needs.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying, like, what will govern that, the logic of what it will do?
Well, that's programming.
The question. Well, there it is. So you think it's driverless cars are a good thing?
Not necessarily so. I mean, if you get, like, the truck things that they want to do on the highway that have their own separate lane and
right.
like an HOV thing and stuff like that.
Right. What movie was that in? We saw the driverless trucks.
Logan.
Was it Logan? Yes. Yeah. Yes.
I mean, that's an interesting scenario because they're on right. a highway. And,
right. That makes sense.
But then, you know, having a driverless car as a mode of transportation or delivery service within
or Uber.
Well, yeah, driver service in a highly congested area, that's a horse of a different color because you're exposing it to more potential risk.
So you think that when they do have driverless cars, it'll be relegated to things like highway and truck lane, that kind of thing?
Well, you know, the other interesting thing is look at the city now, right, and how they're rezoning the traffic.
Yeah.
I mean, you could very likely put in a you know, like we have a bike lane, a driverless car lane.
So that's what you would say, but that can only work in places where there's enough room for a lane specifically
right.
for driverless cars.
You know, or think about it. They're trying to do this congestion pricing kind of thing in the city, right?
Congestion pricing.
Yeah, it starts soon. I'm sorry.
What's congestion pricing?
That means if you go into the city above 96th Street.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I heard that. Yeah, yeah. That you got to pay. Charge a fee, yeah.
So if we can get drivers to stay out of the city, you know what I mean? And we just have people on bicycles and public transportation and some cabs and stuff and why not, then it might be better or it might be easier to create specific routes that are dedicated to driverless cars just like there are bike lanes.
True, but I would think it would make I could see a future where, you know, individual cars, public cars are not allowed in a city and it's only driverless cars and maybe mm-hmm. Ubers or taxis
and bicycles.
Yeah, and bicycles. And that's it. You come into the city, you can't drive your car.
Right.
That would make sense. You have to either get a taxi or an Uber or a bicycle, and that's it.
You know, and from the tourist point of view, like we're talking about, I mean, you're coming in from an airport.
Yeah.
If they had ever finished building the train to the plane thing.
Right.
You know, so.
So they never did finish that, did
no,
they?
No. And in my neighborhood.
What happened? Why didn't they finish it?
Because there was that one accident where the guy got killed.
Oh.
You know? And they should finish the LaGuardia connection. They really should.
Yeah, LaGuardia is being built right now. They're rebuilding it.
Yeah. Yep. And those rail lines should have been built into it. Even if they weren't functional at the moment, you know, and they could connect to it later on, that the infrastructure should have been laid out.
Well, they're going to have to vote for you for mayor.
There you go. And there's plenty of, whatchamacallit, buses that go into LaGuardia Airport.
True.
So, you know, and let me get on my soapbox here.
Please.
But I understand that they want to entice people to use the buses. But at one point, you know, they're complaining about money for the city, right? And often on the holiday long weekends, the Q70 bus that goes from Roosevelt and 74th to the airport, they make it free.
What?
Yeah. And I'm like, that's kind of crazy. You know, how can you complain about money and then you do this for free? The other thing is I'm totally against is, and never in the history of New York was it done, these discounted Metro cards for poor working people and stuff and why not?
Discounted Metro card? No, talk to me.
You haven't heard the whole thing?
No.
Yeah, they want it. They want to give. And De Blasio said he didn't have it in the budget this year, but he's all for it. So that if you're a person of a certain income level, that you will get discounted Metro cards.
Okay.
Again, the system is talking about how it's, as a kid growing up, as somebody who went to, you know, high school and college and has always paid for public transportation, and when I was growing up, my area in Queens was a two-fare zone.
Yeah, I grew up in a two-fare zone.
So, nobody gave us any breaks.
I feel you.
And you know what? If they want to do anything for them, they charge $1 for a new Metro card, give them the Metro card for free.
Okay.
You know?
You don't think they should get a discount?
No, I don't.
Joe's against a discount.
I am, because nobody ever gave us a discount. And how long did it take for them to do away with the two fare zones? How long did we pay? Years.
This is true.
High school, college.
Yeah, we did pay throughout high school and college.
You know, and even when we started working. I remember, you remember on Sundays when you used to get the return ride for free, they used to give you the slip of paper?
Oh, my God, yes, that little slip of paper. Yes, I do.
Yeah, so, I mean, okay, you want to do a program like that? Do it for everybody. Don't, you know, do it for a select few group of people.
You're just upset that they didn't do it for you, Joe.
No, because there's never, if this was something when we were growing up, okay, that they did, and it was as a part of the system, but to do something like that now is just simply a opportunity to get votes at the cost of taxpayers. That's all it is.
I can't disagree with that.
And then what happens? Somebody else goes out. Somebody new comes into office, they do away with it. So it's not a permanent fix.
Right. Right.
So, you
which
know.
You know will happen.
Right. So if you want to give people, they got no problem with it. They get the Metro card for free. They don't have to pay the dollar, and they can use it, and blah, blah, blah. That's great. They're getting a savings.
I concur.
So...
You are tuned to listener-sponsored radio, WBAI 99.5 FM. You've been listening to Night Shift. I'm Mike Sargent. I'm here with...
Joe Masiri.
And we're on Mondays from midnight till 3 a.m. And what do we got next week, Joe? You got some special stuff next week.
We got some special... We got Joe's DGM.
Joe's DGM. I really want to hear what that's all about.
Yes. It was interesting. I was listening to your music tonight at the top of the show, and I did a little mix for myself kind of thing, just in case we didn't hook up and I got
okay.
it for you. But it's interesting how there's some similarity in tone, but mine tends to go a little darker. Like, you know, I have...
But you go dark and you go silly.
Right. Because you got to laugh at it otherwise, you know. You want to take away the power for something, you laugh at it.
All right, so we have Joe's DGM, and you also have an interview next for us next week.
Yes, we have an interview with Michael Levine, composer.
The new show.
Called Siren. It's on...
Now, how is that show? I haven't seen it, because we're going to talk about it next week. I'm going to watch it.
It's interesting. It's really, really interesting. I mean, Freeform is a Disney channel, and they're trying to go for a more upscale... not upscale, they're going for a more mature, but okay. not totally mature kind of tone.
Okay.
And also, like, they brought back that other show that was a movie, and it bombed, and it had the Shadow Hunters. Anyway, that's on there, too. Lisa is a big fan of that. She watches it. Found it a little soap opera-y, you know what I mean? So I didn't really...
Aren't they all a little soap opera-y?
No. Some of the movies tend to be a little bit more character-driven and, you know, fewer characters and yada, yada, yada. This, because it was a series and they can embrace the universe that this author had created, it just became very soap opera-y. And I was like, yeah, pass. So.
Not your cup of tea.
No, but you know what I've been watching?
What?
Riverdale.
Really? I saw the first few episodes of that, and I was enjoying it. I like where they were going.
Well,
they had a murder mystery and all that stuff.
Well, all that was done in the comics.
Really?
So the Black Hood was in the comics before. Yeah, and
I vaguely remember that.
But now what's happening is, so everything that you've seen up to this point has been in the comics, okay? And now the comics are being drawn in a style that looks like the actors playing.
I've heard that was happening.
Yes, so I thought that was funny. But what I'm really looking forward to is the, and they've just finished casting, is Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Which,
they're bringing her into this universe?
No, she's getting her own show.
Wow.
And it's going to be modeled.
Isn't what's her name from Josie the Pussycat the character in the show?
Yes, but she's African American. Well, in fact, the whole band is African American.
That I remember. That I never thought.
But what I thought was really interesting is the Sabrina is going to be based on the newer comics, which is a lot darker than the original comics or the TV series. So, animated series.
Interesting.
So, I mean, there's a whole... Zombie milieu during one of the proms.
Archie and zombies? Come on.
Yes. I actually bought this cool reproduction from Mondo Studios that was...
Archie versus Zombies.
Yes, that was a print.
And Jughead, too?
Jughead. Well, actually, Jughead and Sabrina has something to do with the zombie plague.
Really?
Yeah, because Sabrina accidentally kills... Jughead's dog, and she tries to bring him back. And
Sabrina kills Jughead's dog,
and is feeling bad about it, and unleashes the spell that brings more than just the dog back.
This has already happened in the show.
This has already happened in the comics.
Wow,
that'll be on probably the Sabrina show.
Interesting.
So, yes.
So, all right. Well, tell people where to pledge. And tell them your challenge, just in case they forgot.
In case you forgot, if we've got somebody to pledge and become a BAI buddy, I am there with you, and I am making a $12 a month pledge. And then if we've got a few more people who pledged along the way, for every additional person, I'm kicking in an extra dollar up to, I don't know, $20. So there you go.
All right, so first 20 people, Joe will pledge with you.
Yes.
And he will match that first person who came in and pledged $12 a month.
And
so that's what a BAI buddy is.
There you go.
If we can get 20 on the show, we've got like the last 7 minutes. If we can get like six of them, I'd be happy. Make a pledge right now. 516-620-3602. That's 516-620-3602. Make a pledge, become a BAI buddy, or you can order the DGM Spring 2018. That's the music we've been listening to throughout the whole show. It's over 60 tracks, over 5 hours of music. We send it to you free for a $35 pledge. Make a pledge.
One time pledge.
Just go to a Facebook page and you can just click boom, boom, boom. You're done. Music will be coming to you. You'll have this. You can be sitting back.
Boom, boom, boom. Let's go up to my room.
Boom, boom, boom. Let's go up to my room.
An oldie from the past. Have you seen Superfly yet?
No. They haven't done screens. I don't think it's finished.
Oh, I've been seeing the trailers and stuff.
They haven't done trailers yet.
I have to say, and I want to get this out there, because I've been blown away by so many documentaries lately. And people, there's a documentary on HBO with Michael White, the actor from Boardwalk Empire.
Ah,
And he goes back into the prisons and talks with people and stuff like that. And he talks to kids who have been infected by their family members in prison and stuff.
Wow.
And there's this, I don't want to give anything away, but there's one kid he encounters. And you can tell, this kid is speaking from the heart, and he's such a positive influence. He's fighting it. He's fighting it. He doesn't. And he goes outside the classroom, and he loses it.
Wow.
He loses it in front of the cameras. And really? To see the background where he comes from and has family members that are incarcerated and what they're trying to do to help educate people and get them out into a community where they can do stuff, it's just an amazing documentary. So,
And what's it called?
I have a brain fart and I don't remember, but it's on HBO now, and Michael White is in it, and who I bring up because he's in Superfly, also. So very, very full, very, very powerful. A lot of good documentaries. They had a 2-part Elvis documentary.
Really?
The Searcher.
Did you tell Elena?
No, I did not. Elena, if you're listening, Elvis documentary, HBO. It's all about his connection to gospel music.
Interesting.
Which, you know.
Interesting.
Yes. Yes, yes, yes. So, very, very. Oh, and there's a, well, I'll bring the trailer. I heard this this piece about this documentary about this Indian guru whose followers came to a town and came to this ranch in Portland, Oregon, outside of Portland, and they bought this land that was the size of some city, they said, and they created a city on this property that wasn't zoned for that.
Interesting.
And they had their own, you know, that, and then the people who lived next door to them, the town of Antelope, population 40, they got into it with them. This is,
whoa.
This all happened in the 80s, and these guys found all this footage that these news guys shot that they never used in it. So they got the whole story there.
Wow.
I mean, there was poisoning, there was firebombing, there was, they brought homeless people in to augment the voter rolls.
Wow.
And at one point, the homeless people outnumbered the these people from this town 3-1.
Wow.
Yes. So.
Wow.
An amazing story.
Wow. Well, there it is. You can make a pledge, 516-620-3602. This has been Night Shift. You can visit us on the web at lifeislikesciencefiction.com. You can write us at lifeislikesciencefiction@gmail.com, or you can visit us on Night on Facebook, NITESHIFT, or you can follow us on Twitter at NITESHIFTZ. So, please.
Go there. Do that. Make it happen.
Make it happen, bro.
Do it, 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 Ridge Riff, do it, 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 do it.
There you go. All right, until next week, Joe.
Buenos nachos.